Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Come on, motherfuckers, get in here. I got a little announcement I want to make. I know a lot of you guys have seen me around town going, hey, there's Steve, the new guy, running the cockfighter. Well, I have a confession to make. My name's not Steve, and I'm not a cockfighter. I'm a ball player. And not just any ball player. I'm Kenny F***ing Powers. And I reveal myself to you all here, upon this field. Behold! It's my rookie card. It's me on the front. Y'all want to just pass this around so you can just see it? I'm going to need to get it back, though. You know, I see the look on your faces. You're thinking, hey, Kenny, you're from America. You probably have a printer. You could have just gone on the internet and printed that bitch. Yeah, you know what? I could have. Except for one fact. I don't own a printer. And I f***ing hate computers. All kinds. I come here today not just to bash on f***ing technology, but to offer you all a proposition. Let's face it. Y'all f***ing suck. Don't get your feelings hurt, all right? Don't get sensitive on me here. I f***ing suck too right now. I'm in the darkest third world hole I've ever been in my entire life. About 1,100 million miles from where I should be. And the only way for me to get back there is for us to join forces. If we can make enough noise down here, then just maybe everyone in America will hear us. Everyone will. And they will all know that Kenny Powers is, in fact, the Christ figure that they perceive me to be. So if you all don't believe my words, then perhaps you will believe this. Anyone have a ball? Can I get an El Ballo? Right there? Woo! Okay, got it. If this was America, you'd have a radar gun, and right now, it would read 101. When's the next game, Coach?
Friday.
See you dumb motherfuckers there. Where's the baseball card? It's worth $5. Take that with me. Just trying to pocket it. Keep my f***ing eye on you. All right, don't forget, my number's 55.
Rogers, ¿qué carajos está pasando, güey?
Woo! Woo! 55! See you, motherf***ing Friday!
Hello, it is 33 minutes after the hour of one, and this is the month of April in the year of our Lord 2011. I give a drawing near that ye might learn and be amused on this Thursday. It is the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy and Excoriations. Thank you for joining us on Thursday. Welcome to day 12. It is 503-505-6964. If you would like to join us today, you just look at the computer screen over there and just shook your head sort of disapprovingly.
Another one of those reply all things.
You just see something that someone has fallen into disfavor with you, haven't
they? Yes, it's another reply all situation.
Is it? Are they replying all? Because you, hold on. Let's not get ahead of ourselves here. I was just about to say, isn't it true, Eric D. Snyder, who's filling in for Don Taylor, that I'm going to stop myself right now because if I say it right now, I'm going to get carried away. Hold on a second. Write down. All right, I got a question to ask you about something.
Okay.
We'll talk about replying all in just a second. And because here's the thing. It's not like we're the first people to ever go, like, what is up with people who hit reply all when they're trying to reply to... But there's an added wrinkle to it. Just within the last couple of days, there's now a new insidious, one might even say invidious threat.
Really?
That is upon the land. So we'll talk about that in just one moment. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. If you'd like to be part of this program, telephonically speaking, with your comments, questions, clarifications, observations, ruminations, ponderings, musings of an ironic nature, recipes or tips for mellow and laid-back living, whatever it is you might have, it's 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. That is rick@rickemerson.com. Eric Snyder, who was filling in for Dawn Taylor today, well, the last time we checked, was not in fact painting her toenails, but in fact just eating large amounts of sludgy gelatinous cheese out of the tub. You can be reached at eric@ericdsnyder.com.
Sure, that works.
Okay, I was kind of bluffing my way through that.
No, that's actually right. Yeah, that worked. That's it.
All right, eric@ericdsnyder, that is ericdsnyder. .com.
I'm on the Twitters, too, as Eric D. Snyder.
Are you everywhere?
Basically. I'm everywhere and nowhere.
You loom across the... You straddle the electronic world like a colossus. Sir.
Like Lord Humongous.
Exactly. Like Galactus, the eater of worlds.
Yes.
Eric D. Snyder can be reached at eric@ericdsnyder.com. You can also get on the text box if you want to. That's at the website at rickemerson.com. Or you can Skype if that's your pleasure, if that's your thing, if that's what... Yeah, that's what
turns you on.
I was just gonna say if that's what gets you off. But the thing is, I would say turns you on. But saying if that's what gets you off just sounds, that's like one shade too filthy for me.
That's a single entendre.
I don't know what that's all about. I don't know why I would say turns you on and not gets you. I guess because turning you on comes before getting you off.
Yes.
I mean, unless you don't have time.
Unless you've done something totally wrong.
Unless you're at JFK and your plane is taking off like now, and you really, really have to just skip to the bottom of the
page. There's no time for the turning on.
This is a... We are destination-oriented today, gentlemen. Well, in any event, well, there's some days I wish I could just go back. Here's the thing. It's just like the show is actually, you know, we're live, but I could actually go back and remove all of that.
That's
and
true,
yet I view it as artistically disingenuous for me to do so. So I just leave all of that in.
Well, I think that's part of people like that. Even if they don't listen to the show live, they like that it seems live.
I can hear all his many, many mistakes just as they happened then.
Exactly.
It's like a glorious Technicolor recreation of all my most horrible moments, preserved digitally for all mankind
forever.
So archaeologists in the future can say they appear to have had a very, very low, low, low bar for entertainment standards. Fascinating. And they worshipped Scott Thomason as some sort of god. Who were these people? Whatever happened to Scott Thomason?
I literally don't know who that is.
Really? He was the car guy that kind of looked like
This is a Portland thing?
Yes, well, you're not from these parts.
I've only lived here 5 years, six years.
I thought you were here longer than that. I knew you were from... I grew up in California, then Utah?
In California, lived in Utah for a while, and came here.
Scott Thomason was a guy, he looked a little bit like... he looked a little bit like... Now I can't remember anybody's name. Jesus, he looked like that guy,
He looked like another person.
He did that thing. God, what is wrong with my brain today? He looked like...
Why don't I just Google him? You're no help. Scott Thomason?
Just say I'm no help or I'm not well. I mean, either, I guess, is really true at this point.
Auto dealer, yeah. He threw a party to celebrate the rehabilitation of his image.
All right.
At some point.
But follow me on this.
All right.
Okay. Who played Frodo in Lord of the Rings?
Elijah Wood.
Okay. Who's the guy who kind of looks like Elijah Wood but isn't Elijah Wood, who was in...
Tobey Maguire.
Tobey Maguire. Sons of bitches. You didn't think I was going to find out. You all given up on Rick Emerson. You left me for dead.
Scott Thomason looks like Tobey Maguire.
Okay, no, but just...
All right.
I'm not quite done here.
Okay, sorry.
Okay. He looks like Tobey Maguire. This is no help. You've already looked him up. Damn you, you've already found out who he is. Working my way back up the rope line isn't going to help anybody now.
I want to see if you're right.
Oh, die,
looks
die.
Like Tobey Maguire, who then what?
Okay, Scott Thomason, who was a car dealer, may still be a car dealer somewhere. Sounds like he may be lambing it, but he looks like Tobey Maguire in Sin City.
Oh, okay.
Isn't Tobey Maguire the pervert who gets tied to a tree or something in Sin City?
That's actually Elijah Wood.
Oh, God damn it.
Yeah.
I wish I was dead.
The scale of size and degree, magnitude, goes Elijah Wood, Tobey Maguire, Jake Gyllenhaal.
Is that true? Are they Russian nesting dolls of the same guy?
Yes. Or I was thinking like the chart of the evolution of man. Kind of how that goes, but yeah.
All right. I'm clearly still back at the zygotic state, so let's not dwell on that.
Glad we talked about that.
Okay. That was time well spent, time you're never going to get back. Thank you for joining us, everybody. It's Thursday. Good night. It's 503-505-6964. We are joined by Mr. Eric D. Snyder, who's filling in for Dawn Taylor, who was originally going to be gone today because she was going to be taking her husband, Patrick, to be poked and prodded and have something hard and cold jammed into some sensitive area of his body. That's been put off. Eric Snyder's here anyway because we enjoy the your presence. We enjoy just the pleasure of your company, sir.
And I'm glad to be here. It's been a while since I've had to fill in for Dawn.
Christmas time, right? It was December,
around
that time? We got a corpse watch coming up today, penis watch coming up today, geek watch coming up today. Of course, Mr. Eric D. Snyder in the studio with us working on the following stories for your edification.
Oh, that's right. I did put these together.
Just tell me what they look like,
well,
and I'll
know,
try to suss it out.
A man used a sword and a guitar in a tattoo shop attack.
Okay.
Those were his weapons of choice, a sword and a guitar. A woman in Kelso found an alligator in her garage. That seemed pretty interesting. And a police officer in India shot himself to get an award.
So we've got all of that. So the guitar and the sword, this is not two different attacks. This is one attack, one tattoo parlor, one guy, two weapons.
Yes, he was a...
No,
yes,
waiting.
Exactly.
All right, so we'll get to all of that here. We'll have all the... Because you're saying to yourself, my God, I can't wait another moment. I have to hear these stories. I have to hear the details and every subtle nuance of these news items or else I won't be able to be a fully rounded and productive individual. But you're going to have to wait just a bit.
Right.
So we'll get to those here in a few. Let's see what else. Dawn Taylor is going to be... we'll actually call her... Let me just say this about goddamn Skype. Do you use Skype for anything?
When I have to, now and then.
Seriously, I don't know. It's going to take a second, because it's... Hold on, let me just... I'm just going to play. I used to have this Zen music that I would play whenever I would get aggro about things. I would just get all this agita.
Sure.
For a while, we played Bobby McFerrin, but it had the opposite effect. They would just play Don't Worry, Be Happy, and I would just, you know, Urge to Kill rising and then Incontrollable. But then there was some sort of a flute music that would play whenever I needed to be calm, and now I just have this button that does. Now it's just Rebecca Black. I don't know why I thought that was a good idea. No, we'll just hold on a second. Say something cultured.
This evening on Masterpiece Theatre, we'll look at the Queen's knickers.
Okay.
Prince Charles reported explosive diarrhea this afternoon.
Awesome. Okay, I feel better already. All right. I don't know what the problem is with various computer and software application companies where they create something that just, you know, works. And then they just have to add layers and layers of, quote, features,
right,
and bloatware to it. To the where it no longer does the thing that I wanted it to do or the thing that it did originally, or it does that thing, but in a really circuitous fashion that involves going in, like, through five different drop-down menus to try to find
the
command that used to be represented by a big red button on the thing before that just said, do it.
So what is it that Skype no longer does
on
that
Skype,
you used to do?
So the Skype, which we use here for myriad things, what they've done is they've handily just taken away the item that I use the most, because that's what you want to do. You want to find the thing that people actually use really frequently, and then don't just shrink it or move it around. Just hide it. Flat out hide it. Give it a different name if possible.
Right.
They've just taken away the dialing keypad. The little, you know, where you dial the 503, whatever.
Yeah.
Now, I guess there's a way that you can, there's a way that you can put it back. Like, I think I was able to finally... to locate it in a drop-down menu and then drag it back over.
Are they assuming that people are now mostly using other Skype users as opposed to actual phone numbers?
Or that I can just deal with the power of thought.
Well.
You know, that I can just, you know, think grandma or whatever. And it just sort of, you know. But I was finally able to find it over on one of those, like, customize menus and then drag it back over. It's just a huge pain in the ass is what it was. I think they should have to just put out some sort of a, there should be some balloting that they do before they do a huge revamp. You know, like when Firefox or just anybody, the Microsoft Word, mother efforts, when they did something of like, hey, we're thinking about doing this thing where we take all the handy functions and we bury them in some peat moss out back so you can't find them. Yes or no?
Presumably, they must do some kind of market research and studying and everything.
Yeah, you know.
You would think, but
here's the difference between you. Look, you're a movie critic. Let's not traffic in the idea that focus grouping actually gets you good results.
Well, no, that's true.
Because it doesn't.
But at least it does mean that at some point you thought that there was a sizable group of people who wanted this thing, or at least that it would be profitable somehow.
If by sizable group of people you meet a bunch of fat-ass teenagers at the Lloyd Center food court who want to see something free,
what else
then
would
yes,
I mean?
That is, of course, exactly what you mean. There's a difference between focus grouping something and then actually just sort of taking a poll of the people who are likely to actually use that product.
Yeah.
Because when they focus group, I mean, it seems to me that when they do screening for a movie, It's not that it's not representative of the people who will eventually see this. It's just that if it is, that's just accidental.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, focus group for movies. Yeah, it's nothing but reprobates and retards.
Now, I so do enjoy having you on the program. It really is.
Thanks.
Reprobates and retards. I'm going to get a poster printed up for the Emerson News Network, and that's going to be our positioning statement from now on. Now that KUFO is not around to use it, I mean, it's like we'll probably
right,
just
right.
Let me ask you this. So there's a screening, and we've all gone to those, where it's just a bunch of animals. You know,
right.
It's like a radio station guy up front pelting the crowd with free consumer goods and
yes.
poorly designed T-shirts. And then, it's just some guy with a tankard of Mr. Pibb and just giggling at the Beverly Hills Chihuahua 3 trailer.
Sure.
Do they find the screening crowd at the same place they find a focus group crowd? And what is the difference?
I don't know. I suspect that focus groups are actually slightly – focus groups must be more carefully chosen. Which isn't to say that they're well chosen, but they at least those people are there by invitation. The movie screenings is just whoever picked up a pass, or they were passing them out on the street and people just took them.
Like they were Les Schwab and there was a big pile on the counter.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. The focus group would be slightly more controlled than that, but who knows? The people who go to those are the kind of people who would go to a focus group. I don't know. I've never been to a... Have you ever been in a focus group?
I was once. I was in a focus group for... It was some years ago. It was like they were focus grouping some sitcom. I think it might have been when I lived in Utah, and the ABC affiliate was focus grouping something
really?
that I ended up never seeing on the air. So I don't know if they did it multiple places and it tested really badly. They didn't even schedule it.
What was the sitcom?
I don't remember anything about it. It was like it was, I believe, and this will really set it apart from everything else on the air. It was about a woman who moves back home to her hometown. A hometown she was trying to escape with
a past
she was hoping to forget and a flame that she was blah da blah da blah da blah da blah
right.
and on until the break of dawn. And that was it. And I remember watching it and just... I think it was like 19 or 20, and so I was kind of a jackass. So I wrote something like, this is the worst thing that has ever existed in all of recorded humanity.
Sure.
Shame. Shame! And
sure.
then I handed them, thank you. And... All right, well, in any event, Corpse Watch today, Penis Watch, Geek Watch, Eric D. Snider will have those headlines. We'll do the top five. Today we'll do the top five songs to which you, Eric D. Snider, did in fact mope as a sullen, besmirched, angry, embittered, alienated youth.
Yes.
You thought I was going to run out of superlatives, right?
No, I was waiting to see how many you could do.
But this is the top five that we throw people into the deep end by doing this, because the top five is, it could be a little difficult to do a top five anyway, just because it's not even just a question of what you put on the list, it's a question of what you leave off the list.
Yeah, you're afraid you're going to forget something.
Well, and you say like, oh my God, well how could I not put this song on?
Sure.
And then the next thing you know, you got like 75 songs on the list. So it could be, the winnowing process can be, it's a little tricky. Plus, then you're having to go back and you project yourself into the mind and figurative body of your 15-year-old self and going, how miserable was I and what was I listening to?
Right.
And then you realize that some of the songs might, through the retrospective prism of time, that you can be a little bit embarrassed by them. You can just look and go,
mine are all hilarious.
This was terrible. The thing is, but here's the thing about that. The thing about the song that you moped to when you were a teenager, that them being hilarious... They're hilarious in the way that, like, your dreams are scary, which is that they remain the way they were to you, like, now. Listening to them now, that song probably has, that Bobby Brown was speaking to you.
Right.
He was touching your emotional center. And you listen to that song now, and it's like you immediately flashback, and you sort of are that kid again.
That's
and
true.
The song feels the same way. But then to the outside world, everybody else is like, aha, that's hilarious. You're a Green Tambourine by the Lemon Pipers. That's
sure.
It's funny. It just as like when you try to describe a dream to somebody later, and it's something that was just flat out freaking terrifying to you. But then you describe it to somebody else, and it's just like where Alan Hale Jr. Was underneath your bed with like a Hickory Farm smoke stick or something, and nobody else really grasps the existential horror that
right.
is contained within that imagery.
Right.
So the top five of the songs you moped to as a teenager, that can be difficult to do, but you put it together, and you I have a good sense about it.
I got your email asking me to do it, and my first thought was I don't have time to do a top five. It's been frantic the last couple of days. It's been a weird couple of days. I don't have time. But then I saw the topic, and I was like, oh yeah, I can do that in 5 seconds.
Really? Did it take you long to put it together?
No, it took me right off the top of my head.
It just right there. It just came to you.
Yeah.
Now, when did you? You went to bed fairly late last night, by the way, because
You sent me an email at 3.
Yeah.
And I think you only missed me like a half hour.
I think your email actually this morning said like it said something like I had we'd sort of lady hawked it. We'd It's like ships in the night. We'd barely cross each other. So I got to say, Legion of News went splendidly today. Went fantastically. So well done.
Thank you. Thank
you're,
you.
You're batting 1,000 so far, my friend.
Well, so far.
Let's see what else. We'll also talk to Dawn Taylor, who will presumably be done sponging bits of cheese into her mouth later on today. Well, about last night's episode of Justify with Timothy Olyphant. Do you watch Justify?
I don't.
It's
I've heard
show.
It's a, that's what I hear. And last night was the season finale, wasn't it?
I don't believe so. No. We're in episode 9, season 2.
Oh, that's right. Lights Out had its finale, is what it's another FX show that I don't watch.
God damn, we have just reached a point where I can no longer keep up with the television. I mean, I need to start cloning myself or just getting multiple heads or something or just
all those are viable options?
I mean, because it has always been, I suppose, difficult to watch everything that was on television, but here's the thing. You didn't really need to because most of it was terrible.
Right.
But that's the bad news about entering this new... Here's the two things that are happening simultaneously. We have a confluence of two events happening. One is that there's all of this fantastic TV happening. We are in a new golden age of television.
Yep.
I don't want to say that it's only the second. There probably was a second one at some point, probably the 70s. You know, there was some groundbreaking television that was created then. And I don't really know that by today's standards we would consider it high quality. In other words, even like some of the Norman Lear stuff seems a little corny, a little hokey
right.
in retrospect. But I mean, for its time, it was breaking new ground. So there's that. But right now, it's like we got all of this fantastic television. But it's also on like 75 different channels.
Yeah.
And there is just no way to catch up with. So Lights Out, I'm not even sure that I know what that is.
It had to do with boxing. And it was apparently a great show, or a good show, and then it just finished its season and it has not been renewed. So that's when you don't have to worry about it. It's done.
Okay, that's good, though.
Exactly. I was like, oh, good, I wasn't watching that anyway. Thank goodness it was canceled.
And now I can go watch it. I can, like, power load it on DVD.
If you wanted to, yeah.
And not worry that, like, now I got to wait the whole 4 months until season 2.
Right.
Not
going to
be a season 2.
Sure.
So that works out poorly for them, better mm-hmm. for me.
Exactly.
All right. Justified really is it's quite a show. FX and AMC, man. I'm not saying pound for pound. They really are. They're like your best television value right there.
Justified, I think, is one that I'm gonna catch up on DVD in time for the next season.
It is. It's quite good. As we've said to many people, when we're talking about Justified, starring Timothy Olyphant and Joel Carter, who loves us. The premise of Justified is such that it could be a terrible show. You look at it on paper and you go, I've seen this show a million times.
Right.
It is, in fact, what we were just joking about. It's the guy who goes back to his hometown that he escaped. You know, he kicked the dust of this town off his heels and he saw the world.
Right.
And then he had to go, you know, he has to go back home. And there's the girl there that he never quite finished things with. And there's the childhood friend who's on the wrong side of the law because he, Timothy Olyphant, is, in fact, a U.S. Marshal. And it could be so bad. Even coming from Elmore Leonard, his source material, it could be bad.
Right.
But the acting and the writing and the direction are such that it ends up being far more than the sum of its parts. So I give it a strong thumbs up. Are you watching The Killing? Did you watch the pilot of The Killing?
I've got it on my DVR. I haven't watched it yet.
Dude, you have to.
It's what I hear.
Astounding.
Believe me, I will.
Like, mind-bogglingly good. That's in your, because I know you got nothing but free time, because it's not like you have 75 jobs or something going on.
Now I have 74.
Speaking of which, ka-chunk. So we've mentioned that your writing can be read at film.com, also at ericdsnyder.com, and you can be heard Fridays 11 a.m. To noon, immediately following Court and Bobby and right before Legion of News at Cascadia.fm for Movie BS with Baron Snyder. Up until recently, you also had another job that paid. So tell me about Cinematical and... So Cinematical was an online or is an online movie review magazine.
It's a blog, a movie blog, reviews and movie news and features and so forth.
Now, but what is it? But it hasn't gone. It's not gone under. It's still there.
No, it's still there. The deal is that Cinematical, for a few years, it was launched 6-7 years ago as just somebody launched a thing. And then it got bought by Weblogs, Inc., which ran several other blogs and did fine with it. And then Weblogs, Inc. was bought by AOL. And
it's always the best development in your company's history,
exactly.
By the way.
That's what
AOL
you want to hear, that AOL is now your new overlord. And things still continue to be good enough. The problem is that AOL also owns MoviePhone. Remember MoviePhone?
MoviePhone is a thing that I had not thought about for years until I was in New York a couple of weeks ago. And every time I try not to take cabs in Manhattan, but every time you take a cab, as I had to do to get downtown to see the Book of Mormon, the musical.
Oh.
About which we'll talk later. But I got into a cab, and every time you'd get into a cab in New York, immediately the screen flickers to life, and there's some jagoff telling you about some movie, you know, talking about Battle Los Angeles or something, brought to you by
MoviePhone. Is the MoviePhone guy? Welcome to MoviePhone.
It's not the guy from the actual MoviePhone.
Okay.
It's I think it is the guy who did some, like, in-cab video thing from AOL Movies or whatever, but now they're just mashing all of the brands together.
Well, that's exactly what happened, is that AOL already owned Movie Phone, which I didn't realize had actual content. I knew that it was a website, but I think what it's known for is just you type in your zip code and it tells you what time the movies are.
Right.
Apparently they were also doing, like, actual reviews and features. Very, very, not... I don't think they ever ran a negative review. It was all just kind of fluffy celebrity news and stuff. And so that was fine that Movie Phone was now Cinematical's corporate sibling, because we kind of did different things, you know? And AOL left us alone to do our thing. But then last year, AOL realized, wait, why do we own two different movie blogs? Why don't we just combine them?
That's one of those things where when a larger company buys you, there's what David Brent would call the redundancy fear. Except the good thing about large companies is it sometimes takes them a long time to figure out, like, I got two of these things.
Yeah, it took AOL a while. And I mean, I don't know if this is their defense, but Movie Phone and Cinematical, while both movie-related, had different focuses and different attitudes. So it made sense to keep us separate.
But what are the attitudes? Please to describe now, using one word for each, the attitudes of AOL and Movie Phone.
Well, Movie Phone would be fluffy. Cinematical would be... better. More like actual reviews and interviews and features and some fluffy stuff, but not so much of the... Movie Phone is more like, here's a picture of Megan Fox in a tank top. And Cinematical was more, you know, here's a review.
Well, it was
of
in depth. Cinematical seemed to be, you know, because we know a lot of people, you know, Don Taylor, of course, wrote
for
Cinematical.
That's right, she used to write for,
And so Cinematical was the home to a lot of great, and not just reviews, but, you know, but... It sounds so dumb to say think pieces, but, you know, like sort of essays.
I mean, a lot of regular features about now let's analyze, you know, the cinematography of this guy, or here's a feature on women directors, or, you know, some good in-depth stuff and fun stuff.
And I think Dawn, that's where she did the great movie she's never seen. Like, she wrote about never having seen Schindler's List, I think, and that was where. And there was something about, you know, the great directors and their best role ever was a recurring feature. Whereas Movie Phone was sort of like... some of you oldsters out there, and by oldsters I mean people my age, may remember Jeff Craig's 60-second preview.
It was more like that, exactly.
And you're right, there's no movie that wasn't the best movie ever.
Right.
No movie that wasn't a worthwhile investment of your popcorn dollar.
Which is nothing against Movie Phone. That was its purpose, to be sort of fluffy entertainment, current movie news and fluff.
But not your hard-hitting investigative news
journalism. And that was fine for what it was, and Cinematical was good for what it was. But then AOL said we should sort of fold you together, and so they had this Movie Phone editor become the editor of Cinematical also. Cinematical retained all of its editors, but now they had a new sort of layer between them and AOL. And the end result was that it made it harder for us to work at Cinematical. Whereas before, we used to be able to write more or less whatever we wanted. I'd have an idea for something, and I'd instant message one of the editors and say, hey, can I do this? Anybody else doing this? He'd say, yeah, go for it. Now it was like I got to send an email to this person who's at Movie Phone, who I don't know her. I just sent an email to her. It just became more complicated. It became less fun, and we didn't like it as much. And then what happened was AOL bought the Huffington Post. They may have actually bought Arianna Huffington. I'm not sure exactly.
She can be bought, or rented.
For $315 million.
Yes.
They bought her and her blog media empire. And put her in charge of all of AOL's existing properties. So basically they bought Arianna Huffington and made her the new boss of Cinematical and Movie Phone and all the other, and Gadget and the other blogs that AOL owned.
And she just swept into the building wearing a coat made of puppies.
Yeah. Yes. And so this happened. This was like the very beginning of February.
What do you mean you're paying people?
This was announced beginning of February, and we all kind of thought, uh-oh.
Yeah. Because the Huffington Post, they've done that thing where they... Well, now, did the Huffington... I'm just going to, you know, hold on a second. Let me just, let's do this. Let's pretend now that this is a less awkward segue than it is, because we're actually transitioning to the news segment here, because this is interesting, and I want to move into the actual, the core, the nucleus, the nerve center, the guts of the show here. Let me just, wait a second.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Not really, but this is actually news as well. So because this is sort of happening now. Because somebody asked me, I think it was my wife actually might have asked me the other day. She said, well, she doesn't spend a lot of time online. And so she will sort of glancingly hear about things. Or if something becomes big enough, I have this, somebody asked me one time to define pop culture. They said, well, what does pop culture mean? And I said that to me, my definition of something being pop culture was that if it was large enough or notable enough that it was widely known outside of its own sort of sphere of exposure.
Right.
So everybody knows Michael Jordan, even if you don't follow basketball, because
sure,
he's pop culture. And so she had heard about the Arianna Huffington thing because it was sort of it was kind of everywhere. And she said, "Well, what is the deal with that?" She said, and I didn't know the answer to this. She asked, "Did the Huffington Post, which was just sort of a collection of bloggers and whatever, did they pay people and then they stopped, or did they just announce they were never going to pay people?"
I don't know all the history of how that worked, but I know that the gist of it is that they don't have very many paid writers, almost none, I think. That the idea is that people write for free. They call them like citizen journalists or whatever, and they write for free in exchange for the fact that they get like a big
platform.
And you know, millions of viewers, millions of readers. And so for professional writers, it's bad because you're not getting paid. But if you're not a professional writer, and so they run things like Alec Baldwin writes stuff and movie directors and just various people will write something not for money, but because they just want a platform to say what they're saying. But that was kind of within the professional writing freelance world. It was sort of we looked with disdain upon that formula.
Well, because not everybody's – it's one thing if you're Alec Baldwin and people are, A, going to read that because, hey, Alec Baldwin wrote a thing.
Right.
And also he doesn't – like he's got another job.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're trying to make it as a writer.
Yeah, so it was not a place for people who want to be writers. It was a place for people who had something else going on who wanted a place to write where they would get a lot of readers. So then when AOL bought Huffington Post, we all kind of thought – we kind of suspected that the reason they bought that is that they liked the cut of Arianna Huffington's jib.
Yes.
They liked that whole thing where she gets people to work for free. Tell us more about this, Arianna Huffington.
How can we be more Teutonic?
Yeah. And of course, they didn't say this, but this is sort of – one assumes that that is the appeal of Arianna Huffington from a business standpoint. So they bought the Huffington Post and put her in charge of all the other stuff. And so we're kind of waiting to see, okay, what's going to happen now? Is she going to come in and Huffington up the place?
Right.
Which would be difficult because AOL already was paying its bloggers. How do you stop paying them? And we wondered, how is this going to go down?
Well, I think businesses have long ago figured out how to quit paying people.
Well, yeah.
I think companies in town 3-4 different times have figured out how to quit paying me.
Well, but they don't – how do they get you to keep working, though, for free?
Yeah.
That's
well,
the thing.
And see, the thing about it is it's like there's – and I forget the name of it. I used to know the name of this, but there's an economic theory, and I forget what it's called, but it's there's a slang term they use for it. It's something called like the open grazing theory, because they always use this farm metaphor for it. And the idea is, if you have an open piece of land on which there is grazing, you know, there's grass,
right,
and everybody is allowed to just sort of come bring their cows there to graze for free, it's this paradox that what is theoretically beneficial to any one individual, in fact, harms the collective.
Right.
So if everybody brings their cows to graze there for free, well, if for any one cow, that's a great deal. But for everybody, it ends up being, you know, you get screwed because there just isn't enough to go around.
Right.
So the idea that if you're just saying, well, hey, we're not going to pay you as such in actual money, but you can write for us because you'll get the eyeballs and exposure and profile and whatever. The fact that you're – that is theoretically true for, you know, a handful of people, but of course at the expense of the larger group kind of taking it in the shorts.
Exactly, yeah. So there was nothing, never anything official, but the rumors we're hearing about what's going to happen now with AOL and Moviefone and Cinematical, we kind of thought that it was going that direction. And then on Tuesday, Moviefone editor, whose name is Patricia, she sent out an email to all the Moviefone writers, just sort of a heads-up email like, hey, I've been trying to get information for you about what's going to happen next. Here's what's happening. You're going to be getting a thing in the next few days, probably saying your services are no longer required. You'll be invited to be part of this non-paid blogger system. And I know that won't be feasible for a lot of you, but, you know, if you can, it would be great if you did, because we value your voices, which obviously is a silly thing to say, having just said we don't want to pay you anymore.
Right.
But this was not her doing. This was just what she's getting from the AOL higher-ups.
So she was the messenger, just passing along.
She's the Moviefone editor who's doing her job to convey to us what's happening with our company. And, I mean, she's caught in the middle of it all.
Right.
So we got that email, and nobody liked the idea. On Tuesday morning, I get up and, you know, I'm 3 hours behind the East Coast, and I sleep in anyway, and I go on Twitter, and other Cinematical writers are referring to this email that they've gotten. So I check my email, and I was, sure enough, there it is. And since everyone was talking about this email, and how dare they? Why would they ask us to write for free? That's ridiculous. Everyone's quitting. So I went ahead and I posted the email online, just because I don't know about you. I hate when people are talking about something, but I can't see the thing they're talking about.
Well, it's like when you read a story and they say in an excoriating missive that was sent to an underling today, so and so said, and you're like, well, you obviously have it. Just show it to me.
Let me see what it said.
Yeah.
So I just took a screenshot of the email and posted it, and I cropped off Patricia's name because it didn't matter.
No private information. It was just the actual content.
It was sent out. Yeah, it was sent out to like 25, 30 people.
Right.
And she was just conveying it along. Well, then it spread sort of like wildfire, or whatever the internet version of wildfire is. Firefox. It spread like Firefox.
Well done.
people saying, wow, look at this. AOL's trying to get people to write for free. Well, then AOL sort of backtracked. And so then the next day they fired Patricia and tried to make it sound like it was all – we were never going to ask people to write for – where did Patricia get that?
So the great thing is that they were actually denying that they were going to quit paying people. And to underscore that point, they quit paying her by firing her.
Yeah, well, but at least they weren't asking her to continue working for free. Although that was the joke lots of people made.
So now, just let me understand this. So now AOL owns Huffington Post. They also own Cinematical.
Yes.
And so
they put Huffington Post in charge of MoviePhone and Cinematical.
So is Huffington Post now, is Huffington Post, is that over lots of blogs? I mean,
yes.
are they the head of that genus or whatever?
Yeah.
And does Arianna Huffington, does she have much day-to-day? Or is she just branding it with her name?
Supposedly
and
supposedly she does.
I mean, sipping Mai Tais somewhere.
The deal is they're establishing an actual office. They've got an office in L.A. and New York where AOL already has offices. And they're hiring in like old school print journalists to come and work full time on the Huffington Media Group or whatever it's being called.
Right.
And the idea is the reason they're firing all the freelancers is they're going to have all the content written by full time staffers, which makes sense from a financial standpoint. You get more out of it. You can just pay them a salary as opposed to per article. But the thing is, we all know that they're not going to be able to continue like with Cinematical. They're not going to be able to cover film festivals day to day from their offices in New York. They're going to need like on the ground freelancers.
Right.
And that's where we assumed, oh, they're going to try to get some people to do it for free. And so this email from Patricia kind of indicated all this. Yep, sure enough, that's where it's going. And then AOL tries to say, no, we were never going to do that. That's crazy. Like it was like Captain Renault in Casablanca. Like, I'm shocked. To think
gambling.
That you would ask people to write for free.
Yes.
To think that the very thing that Huffington Post is famous for and the thing that we assumed that appealed to AOL, now they're saying we would never do that.
There's no conceivable reality would we ever, and yet obviously
they have done. And so they threw poor Patricia under the bus, fired her, and then publicly humiliated her, like linked it to the Wall Street Journal that she'd been fired. So they got their scapegoat so AOL can say, no, our hands are clean. We've been fired the bad egg, see? And she was just doing what she was told. It's awful.
It's like, you know, Bill Maher said one time that rumors are always, always, always true. And I don't know that that's necessarily the case. What is the case is that whenever a company, in my experience, whenever a corporation comes in, it's like when they present you with a list of the things that you don't have to worry about, they are making a list of the things that they will do within the next fiscal quarter.
Yes, exactly.
We're not going to change the format. We're not going to fire the morning show. We're not going to get a new PD. We're certainly not selling the stations. What are you, high?
Yeah.
And at that point, I think that's like when Kurt Weber and I looked at each other and just went, well, I'm going to pack tonight. What about you? Yeah,
well,
pretty much.
And with Cinematic, all three editors of Cinematical had already quit. The last one quit on Monday because they all knew what was happening. They knew where it was going.
Now let me ask you this: Now you're a guy who's you're a writer and a skilled writer, and you have made a living for a substantial part of your life, passing your thoughts along to others.
I stay off the streets.
Well, and I do the same thing. I just do it. I do it. Verbally. But now, for somebody who says, well, the Huffington Post is giving you more exposure than you'd probably get otherwise. Otherwise, you're just some guy in on a WordPress blog, somewhere.
Right.
They say, well, isn't that worth something?
Well, you can't pay your rent with exposure. Believe me, I've tried.
Look at this.
I mean, that's if exposure is only good. And this has been a debate the last couple of days. It's not that writing for free is bad inherently. Like many of us, especially writing about movies, started out just writing for blogs where nobody was making any money. But the idea was that at some point this site would become profitable and be part of that, or this would be a launching pad for us to get a gig somewhere else that could pay us. So for someone who just got paid $315 million to not want to pay people, obviously that's ridiculous. And so if you want the exposure, if that's all you need, fine. But for a writer, exposure is only good free exposure is only good if it leads you to something that actually pays money.
It is the means to the larger
exactly,
to the larger
yeah. The
end.
Exposure itself is not helpful if that's as far as it goes.
See, and this is one of those we're wading just like hip deep into something here that is just that at a certain point we're just going to have to start piping the show into Columbia Law School or something, because if we're entering some like long like how many angels can fit inside the flash drive in my MacBook sort of a thing. But but you'll hear this discussion sometimes about what is variously called file sharing or downloading or piracy or the notion or the freedom of information or whatever it is, and that depends on who's making the argument, how
right.
they term that.
Right.
But I mean, I'm all for the price of consumer goods being lower, and I'm all for stuff being cheaper. And I also realize that you're just not going to get a guy to pay $18 for a plastic disc that holds 52 minutes worth of music. It's
right.
That time has passed.
Sure.
I've had discussions with some musician friends of mine, and it's interesting to I've talked to musicians like I've just been I've been in the room actually with talking to guys in a band where multiple guys from the same band, and even within the band, they can't agree about whether they should actually charge for their music at this point.
Yeah.
Because the one guy says, well, the music. Music cost is approaching sort of an absolute zero just because of dilution anyway, because you can get so much for so little effort and in so little time
right.
that it's the idea that you're having to pay like $4 for a song or something or $3 for a song or 99 cents for a song is just ridiculous. He's like, we ought to give it away as a loss leader for all of this other stuff.
Because they make money other ways.
Because
it brings people into the concerts and they buy T-shirts or whatever.
Because they make money, touring, or they make money being, right. Selling their merch. And which then, of course, leads to things like Columbia Records telling the Dixie Chicks that they want half of their touring and merch revenue.
Right.
But the other side of that is we're so far up our own ass with this sort of navel gazing. But one of the issues and I'm not even a musician, so it's not like it affects me, as a musical performer or something. But then you get, I think the issue with that is that assumes that the situation is the same for all musicians.
Right.
And so you'll see people online and there'll just be these. I mean, it's 2011. You would think that sort of the flame wars about certain things would just have died down, but they clearly haven't. And you'll see these arguments about file sharing and about the
pro-piracy,
the online distribution of music, and just going back and forth with people saying, well, no, I'm giving the artist more exposure. I'm giving him a bigger audience that he will, be able to play to when he comes to town. And they'll use somebody like Jonathan Coulton as an example.
Right.
But, but if you're a guy who maybe, if you're some, 68-year-old jazz musician who's not able to go on the road, who's not going to be able to support himself by putting his face on Slurpee cups, it doesn't really work.
Somebody just yesterday tweeted something that was the perfect explanation. It said if the drummer of the band is the one working the merchandise table, don't download their music.
Yeah. I mean, well, and that's,
and
that's the other thing is, you look at a band like, there's a fantastic book called, it's a terrible title, but a fantastic book. It's by Jacob Slichter, who was the drummer for the band Semisonic, and they did that closing time song. And it's called, the book is called, it's called So You Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star, which is obviously a name that came from some sort of whatever the literary equivalent of the A&R guy is. Your title's too thinky. We're going to call it this. But it is the best analysis. He's a brilliant guy, and clearly a guy that never planned on being a rock star. He was a guy that planned on being in college or being in a band for a few years and then going on to be a professor, which he currently is. Huh. But
is he a professor of rock?
He is.
Yes.
Yes, he is. He's a professor of he teaches the advanced awesome course at he teaches African American studies at BU, I think, at Boston University. But they blundered into this huge hit.
Sure.
And he was like, "Hey, I'll ride that ride with a smile, so why not?" But then when it was all said and done and the band had, effectively kind of gone their separate ways, he wrote this great book about more or less what it's like to be inside this machine that is a one-hit wonder.
Right.
When the record company is like, oh my God, we can actually make money with this band. Hold on a second. And then everything gets just switched on to just, taken to this different and just a mind-boggling level. But he talks about everything from playing at, starting at a club playing to 50 people to being in front of 100,000 people 6 months later to being on Letterman and the VMAs and to a video shoot and to the sort of shady accounting practices and the weird math that it happens in the recording industry. But one of the things he talks about is that he said that the thing that breaks up bands, and people don't really realize this, is that there's the singer or the guitarist who typically, in most bands, if there's one guy who's writing the songs, it usually is either the singer or the guitarist,
right.
or sometimes the singer and the guitarist, like Mick and Keith, Paul and John.
Right.
And so He said, what happens is those are the guys who get the publishing royalties. So those are the guys who get actually most of the money that comes from the use of songs in commercials, the use of songs in video games, songs being played on jukeboxes and on the radio. That's all going to the singer. Or that's all going to the guitarist. Meanwhile, the drummer is the guy who makes most of his money from touring. The drummer makes most of his money from, you know, merch.
That's true. That makes sense.
And so that's what will happen. They'll, you know, the band will sell a lot of records, and the singer's like, well, screw this. I can just stay at home for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, the drummer's the guy that needs to get out on the road because that's where he's making most of his money. He said, you don't really have no idea how many band dissolutions or fighting. He's like, do you ever wonder why it's always the drummer that gets fired? It's because it's always the drummer that is being a nag about touring because he's not making money from these other revenue sources that the rest of the band is.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, it's just a thing. Because when would you think about that? So we've just gotten so far afield from the point here. But it is... It's an interesting. Well, I mean, you know, this show's a perfect example where it's like, you know, the Legion of News is a show that we're just sort of giving away as, you know, because we're good people,
right?
And also, you know, as an advertisement for this show and a way to let people who maybe have never heard us before, because I'm not so vain as to think like everybody wakes up and what is Rick Emerson doing today? Is he back on in a place where I can give him money? you know, but
Legion of News is like a gateway drug.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we did the thing at KPAM last week, filling in for Bob Miller for a few days, and and I've been on in Portland for 13 years, give or take. And every single day we were at KPAM, I got an email from somebody who was like, hey, I've been listening to you for like a decade. I thought you just moved or something. Like, I had no idea you were still here. And I'm like, hey, no, we do a thing here. Check it out. Here's the, you know, whatever. Listen to Legion News or listen to Rick Emerson for like a week. If you like it, toss us, you know, 32 cents a day or whatever. Keep listening. If not, you know, you know, whatever. So it's such a strange, in a way, it must have been simpler and yet much more difficult 25 years ago, because there was one distribution venue for everything. So you didn't have to worry about it or think about it.
Yeah.
You know, and the only bootlegs you were getting, that's the other thing about bootlegging. If you listen to like a bootleg from 1972, I mean, it's like you're at home and the band is playing on a car radio that is driving by at 100 miles an hour while a jackhammer plays in the foreground.
Right.
You just hear Paul Stanley going, Kiss loves you! You know, and that's it. And that's all. And the rest of it is just,
But now almost anybody can record high quality digital bootlegs, and that's a whole other
and they sound fantastic.
Yeah.
So it's
and to bring back sort of to where we began a little bit, anyone with internet access, which is pretty much anyone, can start a blog and be as much of a professional writer as anyone else. I mean, as far as the readers are concerned, like there is no, it's not like not like a site says I'm being paid for this.
Well, you don't
if the writing is good. You can be, if you're as good a writer as Roger Ebert, you can be, for all intents and purposes, as big as Roger Ebert, even if you're just off your WordPress blog at your house.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to be this tall to ride this ride anymore.
Exactly.
I mean, well, Matt Drudge is a perfect example of that. He's more of an aggregator than a writer, obviously. But I mean, he's a guy. He was just working at the CBS Studios gift shop, and making like I think literally minimum wage.
Yeah.
In Studio City, and his father. This is actually kind of a charming story. His father was worried that the boy wasn't going to make anything of himself. So they brought him, you know, like a 386 computer or something. And they said, well, you know, poke around with this for a bit. See what you can do. And he was just some guy, Harry Knowles.
Harry Knowles. He was laid up at an accident or something, stuck in bed. So he started a website and changed online film criticism.
The final question about this before we try to do some actual news here, for which you're not being paid, by the way.
I appreciate that. But I knew that going in.
Will you be paid? We'll figure that out later. These are all details.
No bait and switch here.
That's a you'll be paid in the other thing in the internet industry is they realize now that I think they have just opted to not pay people because they know that they can't buy people off the whole we're going to pay you in stock options thing, which is how they horked everybody back in like 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Huffington Post, final question about that. Apart from Arianna Huffington, just from your perspective, apart from her being a known, I mean, she's a public figure herself and, you know, and a sharp operator. And,
a gadfly, a woman about town.
Yes. And is a polarizing figure, but she's never had any problems getting press.
Sure.
That notwithstanding, I mean, like what is the... This sounds dumb to say, what is the big deal with Huffington Press? Obviously, the Huffington Post, there's obviously a big deal about it now, but that's only because it's become a big deal. Like, at the outset, it was just a bunch of blogs,
when
right?
When it began, about 5 years ago, it was nothing, and people scoffed at this crazy woman doing her thing. And in fact—
like, why not Slate? I mean, why is it Huffington Post and not Slate?
I don't know what it is that Huffington Post did that—well, I know partly. Partly it has to do with getting traffic, which gets advertisers, and you get traffic by doing a lot of SEO, a lot of— search engine optimization. You use certain keywords a lot and hit certain key points a lot.
Vagina.
And things like that. And that gets traffic, which gets advertising revenue.
Okay.
And so that way – and that's kind of at the center of this whole thing is that Huffington Post and has been doing that, and AOL had been moving that way, and now they're sort of a perfect marriage of trying to focus on getting page views and less focus on producing actual
page views. Really,
That's where that's where you get advertisers. How do you make money?
I thought that we left that behind with my tripod page.
No, it's still. I mean, I don't know if they call it that, but that's what it is. More.
What's
more
your click through rate?
Stuff like that, and so that's at the center of it because they're less interested in producing good content. Because like you said on Cinematical, a good think piece about so-and-so's best role, unless that person is, who is a big star.
That guy who looks like that other guy from the auto shop.
You know, if you're talking about, you know, Ernest Borgnine's best role, that's not going to get page views.
Right. But if you're talking about Brad Pitt.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah.
And so now with Huffington in charge, yesterday officially fired all the freelancers from all the AOL-owned blogs. All the content's going to be provided. So for now, I guess the sites are sort of shuttered. Like Cinematical, I think, just doesn't have any content right now.
But so if they were a freelancer and they were presumably freelancers but getting paid, they've been fired. Are they now allowed? Do they have to come back and reapply for their old job but for free?
No, because now AOL is saying that that's not what they're doing, that they were never going to do that.
I see.
So now I assume that once this is blown over, maybe in a month or so, they'll start approaching people saying, hey, you want to come write for free?
I see.
I'm waiting for that to happen.
All right.
But the sad thing is that Cinematical, which was once a great movie blog and one of the first big movie blogs, is no more. It's been gutted. And everyone who wrote for it is gone, scattered to the wind. So that's sad for those people.
The irony, of course, of all this is the first thing you tweeted this morning, it actually said something like, I'll be on I'll be on Legion of News and the Rick Emerson Show today, talking about lots of stuff, except Cinematical, probably. So, all right,
I can't get away from it.
Well, let's do this. I'll play this again, even though we played it earlier. That's production
and
value.
Now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Eric D. Snyder in for Don Taylor, who will join us a little bit later on in the program to talk about last night's episode of Justified. Eric D. Snyder at the news desk has this for you.
Well, the man who used a sword and a guitar in a tattoo shop attack. You want to take a guess what state that happened in?
Florida.
Yes.
All right, hold on. And I wasn't even prepared for that, but I just knew. All right.
Nice. He was arrested on suspicion of attacking an Orlando tattoo artist and a customer with a sword and guitar before being struck over the head with a glass table. 37-year-old Jason Gay. Jason Gay of Lakeland, Florida, was arrested on two counts of attempted second-degree murder and two counts of aggravated battery with a deadly weapon. I assume the sword was the deadly weapon. The guitar.
They
call it an axe.
I guess it depends on how motivated you are.
I guess, yeah.
If you're willing to put in the time. So what I don't get. Okay, so he attacked somebody with a sword.
Well, it lays it out here. It takes us through the crime here.
Okay.
Jason Gay entered Ace's tattoo shop, and the tattoo artist told him to look through some books while he finished with a customer.
Okay.
While the artist was giving the customer a tattoo, Gay came around a corner holding a long sword in one hand and a guitar in the other and struck the tattoo artist in his shoulder with the sword and him in the back of the head with the guitar. So I don't
if that was like simultaneously or if it was sort of a
that seemed like an odd.
Seems like he's sort
of. Where did he get the sword and the guitar?
I don't know. He's sort of doing a misrendering of mariachi there because he's adding to his workload. He's really not becoming more efficient.
He's a mariachi samurai.
Yeah, he comes. It must have just been in the back or something, or was he? He just found them like they belonged to another customer.
And those details do not seem to be here. Then he went after the customer, saying he was going to kill him. And the customer, who was getting a tattoo on his chest, jumped off the table to defend himself. As the fight continued, the customer picked up a glass tabletop and hit Gay over the head.
Okay, that's where I'm curious, because it's like, even if it's a tiny table, a glass tabletop is not light.
Yeah.
So you got to figure that, he's picking – first of all, you're picking the wrong venue, because a tattoo parlor is not the place where you want to go just causing a kerfuffle.
Never pick a fight in a tattoo parlor.
No. You just don't, because that's a whole lot of guys who are either A, huge, like macho, burly convicts who will beat your ass into
yes.
a powder, or – a lot of guys who are desperate to prove that
right.
they are big, macho, burly guys who beat your ass to
powder. And probably also a lot of drunk guys.
Exactly. And also, hey, there's a guy clutching a needle. So,
yeah.
So the guy swings a glass table, which indicates that the guy's pretty large.
Yeah.
So he's picking a fight with the wrong people on several levels here.
So then the guy, Jason Gay, ran from the store and was later located by Orlando police. He was taken to a hospital. and told police that the tattoo artist and customer were playing, quote, word games with him. And that's what prompted the attack. When asked to clarify, Gaze said they were, quote, sex games, and claimed that the pair called him a Chang Gang punk. So apparently he felt provoked by the tattoo artist and the customer and then attacked them.
A Chang Gang?
A chain gang.
Chain gang.
As a punk from a chain gang, this Jason Gay. I just think what they would have done if they knew his last name.
It's hard to imagine. Yes, it's hard to imagine what he could – how what irritations he could be lugging around in his brain from childhood.
Yeah, yeah. But apparently he's also lugging around a sword and a guitar.
Yeah.
Just in case he needs to defend himself or play a set.
You are listening to the Rick Evers Radio Program along with Mr. Eric D. Snyder, who can be heard Fridays 11 to noon at Cascadia.fm for Movie BS with Baron Snyder, and it can be read at ericdcenter.com and film.com. Let's do a couple more here. We'll take a break. Come back with more on the other side.
A police officer shot himself to get an award. What the police officer claimed was that six unidentified men started shooting at him while he was on personal protection duty at the house of a former politician, and that they hit him three times in the stomach and the arm, then sped away. What really happened was that the police officer shot himself three times in hopes of receiving a bravery award.
So what, he said he was shot by six guys, but how many injuries? Did he just have like the one?
He had three injuries.
Three injuries. Okay.
Yeah.
So where at on his?
In the stomach and the arm.
Stomach and the arm. Okay.
Yeah. This happened in India. I was hoping it happened like here, like in Portland.
Just cause?
Just because it seems crazier when
it's a homegrown color.
Exactly. Yeah. Because you kind of think outside of the world, they do a lot of weird things over there. You know?
Right. India, that place is nuts anyway.
Sure.
Am I right, guys?
Well,
right
they got towns overrun by snakes
over there.
But this fellow, Mahesh Rajguru of Jaipur, that's the capital of the eastern state of Rajasthan, was admitted to a government hospital where his condition was reported as stable. His position on the police force, not so much. When they figured it out, obviously they fired him. They also searched his living quarters and found narcotics.
Plus, you got to figure, you know, it's in India, so it's... It's not like he had a full-powered American gun.
Well, exactly.
I mean, that's a third-world gun he's using there. Let's do one more here, and we'll take a break. We'll come back with more of Eric D. Snyder, and we'll talk to Don Taylor in a bit about last night's episode of Justified.
So up there in Kelso, Washington, a woman opened a garage, and found an alligator inside.
Now, Kelso is one of those places that I see on the map all the time, but I don't really know that I ever drive through it or by it or near it.
I don't know where Kelso is.
Okay. It's like somebody going, like, it's near Bothell, and I go... Sure.
Yeah, all right.
Okay.
Apparently, they got alligators there, apparently. Her friend, who was renting an apartment from her, put the alligator there without her knowing about it.
So, you sure it wasn't a post-it note that fluttered to the floor? By the way, don't open garage door, no matter what you do. Thanks, Jess.
The alligator is 2 to 3 feet long and is only 8 weeks old. Oh, it's a baby alligator.
Oh, God.
That's cute.
It's basically giving you little kisses.
Yeah. And the woman who, who discovered him. Survived.
That's got to be a strange moment in your life. I wonder if there's a why where you just won't accept it, where you just open the garage and you look at it and you just sort of blink hard several times trying to like, no,
yeah.
Alligator's still there.
That can't be right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, sure enough. Didn't bite anybody. Animal control arrived.
Did the woman say why? I mean, was there a reason?
Well,
I'm going to be gone for a while and the kids, they're always tying cans to his tail.
We do not have that. We know that the woman was renting an apartment to a friend of hers and that the friend left the alligator there. But yeah, I want to know why the friend had an alligator to begin with.
Yeah,
why it left it there.
And it seems like
left it there.
And if you're going to be renting an apartment to somebody, somebody's going to be house sitting for you. Like that, like if somebody, like if you were just going to have somebody, you know, stay in your house for a couple of weeks and they had like a black mamba.
Yeah.
That's the sort of thing they might want to apprise you of.
Going out of town for a couple weeks. Oh, by the way, I've got an alligator.
About this horde of bison that I take with me everywhere. Do you mind?
It says the animal control arrived just in time because the alligator hadn't eaten for 2 weeks.
Okay.
And his name is Charlie. And they gave him a raw chicken and everything's fine. So it all works out.
That's how we deal with Dawn, actually. You're listening to the Rick Everson Show right here at the Everson News Network. Thank you for joining us. We will actually talk to Don Taylor here in just a few about last night's episode of Justified. Coming up later on, we got Geek Watch, Corpse Watch, Penis Watch on the way. And improbably enough, we will also cram in the top five moping, brooding, and I don't know, what's a third verb there? Moping, brooding, and sulking, and
sure.
Something else. Songs to which you did all that when you were a teenager. So that's Mr. Eric D. Snyder. Back after this. Stay there. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
that I love. It's me following you. My heart like a kick drum. My heart like a kick drum. My heart like a kick drum. My love like a voice. My heart like a kick drum.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network. You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. We're here with Mr. Eric D. Snyder from ericdsnyder.com, film.com, and Movie BS with Barrett Snyder, which airs tomorrow, that is Friday, 11 a.m. to noon on the Cascadia.fm. By the way, just FYI, apropos of nothing, I was just online. I was just doing something or other. I don't even know where the hell I was. I was in Yahoo for some reason.
Sure.
And, you know, Yahoo does that thing of the little headlines where it's like the three things they think you need to know.
Right.
And I swear to God, one of the headlines at Yahoo News now just said, "Cow that can jump makes writing dreams come true." And it was like my hand hovered, or as my wife would say, hoovered over the link. And I was like, I got to find out more about that. And then I thought, there's no payoff commensurate with how excited the headline made me.
That's probably true.
There's really, like, what could they possibly say unless, you know, I mean, unless the cow was made of chocolate and cured cancer.
And now it's going to play basketball.
Exactly.
Yeah.
With Lil Romeo. there's nothing I could read in that story that would satify the expectations that have been raised by that.
That's a good point.
You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. You are hearing Mr. Eric D. Snyder in for Don Taylor. And let me, where's more of that news? Hold on a second. Let me just, there we
and
go.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Before we do anything else, though, you were like seething. There's been several small seeths about this, actually. Like, between the two shows, between Legion of News and this show, and then I think in the last break, it's like you would just sort of look at the computer, and you would kind of squinch up your eyes in a disapproving fashion and just sort of, like a small grit of the teeth.
Well, yes, and I think, you know, I've talked briefly that there's nothing worse in the world than people who hit reply all when they don't need
to. That's a cancer.
It's the worst thing. It's the worst thing that ever happened to anyone, and I hate it so much, and it's been happening, it's been going on, and that's what I've been squinting with disdain at in my email. What makes it especially ludicrous is that these are emails from Cinematical people. It's a place I don't work anymore, but for some reason I'm still getting these emails. And even if I still worked there, this wouldn't be a conversation I need to be part of.
But now it's just like,
and especially,
it's irritating on at least two levels.
Why? Getting the first email was irritating and baffling, and now I'm getting people replying all for this thing that doesn't affect me anymore.
Maybe later they can complain about how they're running dangerously low on regular coffee, and there's only decaf, and there's just the Irish mocha cream in the kitchen, and what is up with that?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, here's—I know that it just sounds like I'm just full of questions about this, but I am fascinated, like a sort of low-rent, uneducated Studs Terkel, about people's jobs and what they do, and people who work in places, that, you know, different kinds of industries than me.
People who have real jobs, you mean?
Yes, yes. That's people have actually had to work and exercise something other than their mandibles. This is my mom actually nailed it like right out of the gate when I was young. She was like, "You better find a job talking because it's all you can do, son." Like there was no like maybe you should learn another skill or maybe you should broaden your palate a little bit or maybe you be good at two things. No,
there was no hope of that.
No, it was that she had like washed her hands like the idea that I was ever going to be gifted or skilled or even mildly competent at like anything else.
Well,
so instead, it was like you better turn into the skid.
Well, you showed her.
Yeah, in your face, Mom. So you talk about a place like Cinematical. Now, there is no actual, like, there's no offices for a place like that.
Right, no. In Cinematical's case, it was owned by AOL. So there were AOL offices in New York. But, yeah, the people who worked for Cinematical, even the Cinematical editors, basically worked at home.
Because some of the blogs that I go to, I think this is human nature just in your head. You picture it being just sort of I picture it being like the writer's room on the Gary Shandling or on the Larry Sanders Show, you know, where everybody sort of sitting around and there are 3x5 cards on the wall and then occasionally someone brings in a cake.
I wish.
Probably not.
No, mostly you're by yourself at your house writing on the internet.
Is paying people to write or to blog or whatever, is that the exception, in the United States anyway. It seems like that's still the exception.
Well, it depends. I mean, since there's, you know, a trillion websites in the world, then yeah, the exception would be the ones that pay. But as far as big websites that are well-known and well-trafficked, they all pay generally.
So if you were to look at I think you mentioned Gawker.
They pay. And it's not great, and they pay mostly per post, and it's mostly technically the writers are freelance, so there's not like healthcare or anything, but it's a living.
Well, let's be honest, it's not like you'd have healthcare. Even if you were working in the writing room with the 3x5 cards and the cake, there'd still be no healthcare.
That's true.
At least this way you can sleep in. One of the things that writers always deal with we've now just entered full-on Charlie Rose territory where this is just solely now about what I find interesting.
Well, that's fine.
One of the things that writers deal with is the how to get their work out there, you know, at first. Like, how do you get your foot in the door? And
you know, you hear sometimes that the big pain in the ass is that you can't do just like unsolicited submissions. Like you can't right. just you can't just send something to a magazine. Dear Time Magazine, please. Like a lot of places, they'll tell you like they'll full on like shred it.
Yeah.
Like I know if you send something to Dark Horse Comics and you're like, I got a great idea for a superhero. He's you know, and he's the shredder. That's right. what the superhero is.
That's
and
the irony.
Yeah, and it's so he just, they don't even read it because they're so afraid of lawsuits.
Exactly,
and you know,
yeah.
whatever. So it, with a place like, you know, Gawker or Gizmodo or some site that might pay, can you just be a guy who just sends them stuff, or do you still have to be an established writer?
Well, you don't have to be established, and I mean the blogs are the way that a lot of people get their first paid writing gigs is at a blog, and the way that you get it, it's kind of like anything else. You be at the right place at the right time and sort of know somebody and get
young
lucky.
Guy.
Yeah, and I know some people. Like there's one writer I know named Will Goss, who's a very, very good writer. He's like 22. He's been writing since he was like 13. And he's like a really smart, sharp movie writer. He got his first, I don't know if it was his first, but he got his job writing at Cinematical because he was posting comments on Cinematical articles and just became part of the community
really?
Of like one of the regular commenters. Obviously a sharp kid, obviously involved. And then he went to South by Southwest and happened to meet the editor there. And the editor's like, oh, yeah, I recognize you from the things. And Will's like, you know, are you looking for writers? And he said, send me something, and there you go. So, I mean, that's usually how it is. You sort of make your voice heard somehow. Either you've got your own blog or something, just because you've got something to point people to. And then when the time comes, you point them to it and say, hey, I've been doing my thing over here for free on my own time. You know,
it's interesting how, the analogs that you see in certain industries, because there's in the radio industry, radio is replete with people who got their first job or got their break because they were a caller or because they
oh,
were
yeah?
somebody. Yeah, you'll hear. I mean, which is not to say that it happens with most callers, but in radio you will meet a lot of people who started that way.
And I hate to even mention it because I feel like 90% of people who comment on websites are just a-holes.
Yeah.
And I don't want to give them hope that like they're going to –
no,
that's going to lead to something.
No, give them hope that they will be cruelly snatched away from them someday.
No, because that means they're going to keep commenting and keep trying to be clever. You know, I know what you're saying.
No. But it is the same thing with. I mean, let's be honest. It's not like it's radio listeners or commenters on message boards or like anybody. It's just that most people are just useless.
Well, that's true.
Most people are just taking up air that you and I could be breathing into our sweet, happy, productive lungs. But yeah, if you're in radio, it's just like with message board people. It's the minority of people. But in radio, you will meet every now and again somebody who's like, "Oh, how'd you start?" Well, it's like I was a caller to the morning
yeah.
show. And if you're a caller into a radio show of any sort of. You know, that has, then if it has any sort of reach, or if they have a producer, or if they have a call screener, what happens is over time, the call screener will file away, like, hey, when Jerry from Milwaukee calls, that guy's always great.
Right.
And then at some point, what will happen is, they'll need somebody to do a bit for them, or to go out on the street and do a zany interview, or to come into the studio and do some contest, or to fill in for somebody for a day, or whatever. And it's like, and that's how you get the foot in the door. So it's interesting that somebody who's known on a message board or who is a contributor, you know, just from the audience can
right.
actually get it. I guess it's strange, but not strange at the same time.
Well, and even going further back, when I was a kid and there was a man that I knew who was a professional writer. He wrote for some outdoorsy magazine. I think he was on the staff, but I knew that he made a living
Stump
as
World.
A writer, something like that. Yes. And I wanted to be a writer. And so I was talking to him about, you know, how do you become a professional writer? Like, what can I do? And he said that one way to do it, like if you want to get a job in the newspaper and they're not hiring, what you can do is write letters to the editor. Like, make your voice heard that way. And after a while, they start to say, hey, this guy's he's a sharp writer. He knows what he's talking about.
Well, and plus, I would imagine if you're writing letters to the editor, I mean, just the fact that they're not scrawled in crayon, that they don't accuse Jews of running everything, you're going to stand out.
True. And of course, this was 20 years ago when newspapers were, you know, when they were a thing. But yeah, I mean, that was – so I guess maybe that's always been the way, that you kind of get your foot in the door just by being a participant and making your voice heard somehow.
Speaking of making voices heard, so somebody says, apropos – I mean, this is probably in relation to something. It just says, Eric D. Snyder is – and then it says, all caps, Eric D. Snyder is nuts, ellipsis. And then he continues. He picks up the elliptical statement on the other side in a separate comment, and I like it.
Thank you.
I don't even really know what that's referring to, but I disagree.
I like you too, whoever you are.
let's do one more here, then we'll get Don Taylor on the phone for last night's episode of Justified. We got we got watches. We got to try to get to at least a couple of these. We got the top five coming up. It's all very exciting. Here's Eric D. Snyder.
Over in Georgia, not the state, but the country, Georgia. You over there? over in the wherever Georgia is.
Someplace that's not here.
It used to be Russia.
Yes.
An old Georgian granny on a scrap hunt accidentally cut off internet access to the whole of Armenia for 5 hours.
Now, is this? I thought that was a joke.
It is reported by The Guardian, which is a legitimate news enterprise in England. The woman, 75 years old, had been scavenging for copper to sell when she sliced through a fiber optic cable with her spade outside the Georgian capital of Tbilisi.
So there's just one cable that's powering it.
And for some reason, the cable for Armenia was next door in Georgia, which seems like you're asking for trouble.
Is this like how in Tacoma you'll just see those, like you'll just pass those neighborhoods where there's one like extension cord plugged into a power pole outside, and then it goes into an apartment building, and then you just see one orange cable going from building to building to building?
I'm kind of thinking that Armenia had been stealing its internet access from Georgia the whole
time. Pirating is what they're doing.
Yes. But yeah, she just actually cut through it, and they were Armenia. All of Armenia was without the web on March 28th.
The question is, how did they discover that it was this woman? Like, she must not have known what she did. She must have been totally oblivious.
She obviously wasn't doing it on
purpose.
Because
otherwise you go like, just get into a car. And
she was scavenging for copper. I mean, so she was trying to cut wires. She just didn't realize that she was cutting the internet wire.
The internet wire.
Apparently vast swaths of Georgia and Azerbaijan also lost internet access. The spade hacker, as local media has christened her, could face 3 years in prison if charged and convicted for damaging property. She was arrested shortly after slicing the cable, but later released on account of her old age. So, yeah, I don't know how they tracked. Well, they must, when the internet goes out and there's only one wire, they must know what
happened.
I mean,
they know right where to go.
Yeah, maybe she was still there, or I don't know.
The interesting thing about, well, there's several interesting things about this. I mean, also that not just like the one cable or the one wire that feeds everything, but also that they don't bother to actually, like, you know, dig it a little deeper or, like, you know, wrap it in something that might keep it from being severed accidentally.
Yeah, it's just the cable that you might trip over. Like, what's that damn cable? That's for the internet for the whole Eastern Europe.
Kicks it out of the wall and suddenly... because, like, we had the one time that we've lost internet access here, and this is one of the things that prompted me to get my my iPhone, is so that we would be able to continue broadcasting even, you know, through snow and sleet and darkest night and whatever. And so ever since since I got my iPhone, I've sort of secretly longed for the internet to totally and completely crash just so we could maintain our broadcast and, float like a broadcasting cork on an ocean of silence.
Right.
But it was because a guy on the other side of town had backhoed up like a huge, and it took a backhoe because the things are encased in steel.
Right.
So I like the idea that there it's like it's running and that's enough for now. Just sort of don't touch it or jiggle it in any way. And then, along comes a woman just sort of, kah!
Well, hopefully they've learned their lesson.
I would imagine that's almost certainly not the case.
Probably not.
Let's see here. Let's see if I can get this, what do you call it, this phone to dial here.
Dialing up old Don Taylor.
Yes, we're gonna see how that works. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you. It is Thursday, and tomorrow we'll be joined in the studio by Mr. Big Jim Willig with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. That is tomorrow, and I'm not sure who he is profiling tomorrow. Last week, Andy Kaufman. Tomorrow he'll be profiling another yuckster from the annals of comedy.
Probably Carrot Top.
That is probably... Well, here's the thing. He did... we didn't see the Andy Kaufman thing coming because he's done... it's been like Bill Cosby, and it was Mel Brooks.
It was Carol Burnett,
Carol Burnett. And then he brings the Andy Kaufman, who I know he does not care for. I know he dislikes Andy Kaufman intensely. But apparently for April Fool's Day, he wanted to sort of reverse it. He didn't pretend they liked him, but he did a sort of, but he just inverted it. And he talked about somebody who he felt was not a great contributor to the world of comedy.
But who was significant,
whether
you liked him or not. Yeah, that's fair.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, the thing about it, that's sort of the undeniable, like ball punch at the end of the whole thing is that, like, I don't really care for Andy Kaufman either, and yet I had to acknowledge that we were talking about him like 30 years after he snuffed it. So, and I know who Gallagher is, so, did Gallagher die?
No.
There was a thing where he collapsed on stage clutching his chest like a week ago, and this but see how sad. He literally clutched his chest and I think had a coronary on stage in front of an audience of people, presumably 90% of them had cell phones and cameras, and yet no one has actually heard about this, and no one knows.
Yeah,
that's the saddest commentary imaginable.
His audience are all like old yahoos, though. They may not have had cell phones
and
cameras.
This jitterbug can't take any photographs.
Yeah.
I try to make it. Hold on. Let me try to get a daguerreotype made up of this. let's see if I can we'll get our call on here with Dante. But, I mean, how sad is that? There's an audience full of people, and
Yeah,
no one has actually heard. So, but apparently, he just went down like a sack of potatoes on stage.
Good for him.
You know, I'm not gonna say he's unlikable. He's an unpleasant person. Hello, Don Taylor. How are you?
I'm good. Just sitting here polishing up my ukulele.
Would you like us to get back to you in 7 to 8 minutes?
No, it's okay. I have the linseed oil on my hands, though. So Thank God for that invisible shield.
Exactly.
Did you finish your ukulele?
I am getting there. I am getting close to finishing the ukulele. Listeners may not be aware that the original ukulele kit was a birthday gift to me from Eric D. Stutter.
It was indeed last September.
I somehow had forgotten all about this.
Yeah.
Does it say on the side, like, is it one of those, like, appropriate for ages, like 0 to, does it say how long the estimated assembly time is, Eric?
No, I never saw it because I ordered it from Amazon.
Oh,
it was on Don's wish list.
Okay.
So I never physically saw it. I still have not physically seen any part of it.
It is sort of a Zen construction where it, you know, it's a very step by step, you know, one, you know, every journey begins, you know, with the
process of building the ukulele is really the joyous part.
It's a song she's singing to the creative self within.
Right.
Other than that, how was the pub cheese?
The pub cheese was delicious. I got me some of those TLC crackers at Trader Joe's. And because at Mormon Book Club on Friday, our friend Eric and my friend Josh had cooked us some delicious sausages. I also got some chicken and turkey sausages at Trader Joe's.
Oh.
So I had a whole sausage pub cheese cracker thing for
those
lunch.
Were delicious.
The TLC cracker, that's like the kind of the white box.
What is TLC cracker?
No, it's a brand. It's like I think it's from the people who make Kashi, maybe.
Okay. It is.
Yeah. And so if you like it, so it's a heartier kind of cracker. Those are always one that's my wife buys them. I gravitate right to the Triscuits. But especially here's the thing, like any idea that I was ever going to move to it, that I was going to switch my cracker loyalty that was vanquished the instant they unveiled those cracked pepper and olive oil Triscuits, which are like the best thing in the history of the universe. So I mean,
I'm sure I would like those if I tried them. I'm a simple Cheez-It man.
Cheez-Its, really?
Yeah, and Wheat Thins. Cheez-Its and Wheat Thins.
Okay, well, Wheat Thins I can understand. Cheez-Its?
You didn't like Cheez-Its?
No. You are the first person. Okay. No. What are you, high?
Well.
No. What are you, a communist? Of course not. The first, not only do I not like Cheez-Its, I do believe you are the first person that I have ever met, like face-to-face, who, I mean, if they're in a bowl and that's all that's around, I know people that I guess they'd eat them.
Right.
But you're the first person I've ever met who actually prefers, like you will seek them out.
I buy them, yes. I buy them at the store.
Do you also like Circus Peanuts?
No.
Okay, well, I'm just checking because that's
not a monster.
Thing that Well, I know that now. All right. Before we do anything else, let me take a moment just very briefly to say that this portion of the Rick Emerson Radio Program is brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com or calling 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609. And as we did yesterday, we wanted to say hello to a new listener, Marshall, who I believe is listening to Legion of News and may, in fact, be listening to the Rick Emerson Show today. Marshall was here because he was helping to work on the air conditioning and cooling and heating system, which is mounted on the roof of this building. Even though Squires Electric, actually, you know, they are the ones, we've talked about them wiring the studio. We've talked about them sort of keeping the electrical fort held down here.
Mm.
But they understand it's not just about the right tool for the job. It's about the right guy to handle the right tool for the right job. And if you are a person who is even the tiniest bit unsure about how electricity, you know, works and moves and what is it, De Niro? Is it De Niro that says it in Backdraft? It thinks. It hates.
I don't think it's De Niro.
Is De Niro in Backdraft?
I don't think so. I think you're thinking of, what's his name, that other guy.
Who's the guy? Is it Tobey Maguire? Who's the guy in Backdraft that is talking about fire and he goes, it moves, it breathes,
it's
it hates.
Guy who, spoiler alert, turns out to be the guy. Like, he's obsessed
Scott
with fire.
Scott Glenn?
Could be.
Don Taylor? Yeah, she's just gone.
All right. Got her mouth full of cheese. I'm going to look it up because I don't think it's De Niro, but it's someone like that.
I swear to you, Robert De Niro's not in Backdraft. Okay, that's just... It's
oh, no, it is Robert De Niro.
Ha-ha! In-your-face, movie guy. Now I'm definitely not paying you for your next blog.
It is De Niro, you're right.
It doesn't matter, it's a terrible film. And it's got one of the Baldwins, right?
William Baldwin. Is that our local Baldwin?
No, that's Daniel.
Baldwin.
That's Daniel.
Right.
That's
William the Christian? The born-again Christian?
William the Christian, that's his crusade name. Avast! Okay, let's everybody stop. Stephen Baldwin is the crazy Christian.
Okay.
Daniel Baldwin is the rapper. Alec Baldwin is the talent.
Daniel Baldwin lives here.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and then...
William Baldwin.
William Baldwin is...
Is the one who was in Backdraft.
And Sliver.
That sounds right.
That is Billy Baldwin. Not Biodome, but okay. Sliver and Backdraft.
Which one was in Biodome?
Stephen.
The Christian.
Yes.
That is one of the, from Eric's bad movies, that is one of the hardest movies to watch that I've ever sat through.
Really?
Just unbearable.
But you made it all the way through.
I made it all the way through, but that one was tough. It's so irritating.
It's excruciatingly.
Oh, man.
Is there a movie that is so, is there a movie that you've tried multiple times to get through and you've failed?
No, I've never, has there been a couple that I've sort of watched the last 15 minutes on fast forward with the subtitles on so I can still follow the dialogue?
Awesome.
Where I just couldn't take it anymore and I knew where it was going anyway. Like, you know, a lot of action movies, you can skip, if it's 90 minutes long, you can skip minutes 70 to 85 because
right.
It's just going to be people running around shooting at each
waiting
other.
Waiting for the climax where they go, where the guy goes,
yeah.
And so ice to meet you.
And
then,
so find a way for get to the resolution, but yeah. But no, I've never just given up on anything.
Wing Commander.
Trooper.
I couldn't make it through Wing Commander.
Do you want to know, this is another sidetrack, but Wing Commander, I watched, I had a clinical depression breakdown a couple years ago, which is now hilarious. At the time, it was not as hilarious. And I was, in the beginning of it, still trying to do my work. And so I watched that for Eric's Bad Movies, sat through it, could not find any joy in anything, even in making fun of it. And so I couldn't write about it. So I had watched it for nothing.
That's the unkindest
cut
of all.
But then finally, about 6 months ago, I watched it again and wrote the article. So I finally defeated it.
So you know, you finally have gotten off. That millstone is removed from your neck.
I watched it twice, but damn it, I got it.
The idea of having no net gain of any kind for watching Wind Commander is like that's one of the worst punishments. That's what the gods have decided. You know,
bad enough I sat through it, and then I couldn't even think of any jokes to make about it.
Wow.
Yeah.
My wife and I tried, I think, twice to watch it all the way through, just because for me, I'm a completist, and it became like we paid for it.
Right.
Because I bought it for like a dollar on DVD.
Sure.
Thinking, you know.
How bad could it be?
How bad could it be? Let's say I bought that in Norbit in the same trip, thinking well, you know. It's not even like it's so bad, it's good kind of a thing. It's like, Norbit especially was just, you heard so much that it was like the worst movie ever made.
Right.
And so for me, it became like this cultural artifact. Like, I think Dawn just hung up on us. It became this cultural artifact where I just wanted to know, well, what's the deal with that? Like, in a weird way, it became an important movie almost because it was so bad. It was a benchmark.
It's like when it's like, hey, this milk has gone rotten. Smell this.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, I want to see how bad it is.
Or when somebody goes like, it's not just bad, it's Geely bad. And I'm like, well, I got to know what that means.
Right.
But we couldn't make it through. SquiresElectric.com or 503-252-1609. Hello, Don Taylor.
Hello.
I don't know how that happened. There was a thing that happened there. It doesn't matter. Really, all you heard was us talking about Wing Commander.
Just destroyed the phone call.
That was the last straw.
That was it. All right, there you go. Squires Electric makes all this possible, somewhat ill-advisedly. All right, so without further ado, let's do this. Let's talk about last night's episode of Justified, which aired on FX, which airs Wednesdays at 10 p.m., which you really ought to be watching, which is a fine program. Don Taylor, your thoughts on last night's Justified?
Well, me?
Yes.
God, first of all, that excited me.
I'm sorry? What? Yes?
You cut out there or something.
Got to see Walton Goggins dance.
Yeah, it was, I mean, well, we're big fans of Walton Goggins. We're huge fans. And the idea that you have, the thing about that character is the way that he just every now and again, and a lot of the characters do this, will just unveil some side of themselves, sometimes large, sometimes small. But the idea that you got to see Walton Goggins dancing, because there was this whole thing that happens at what's-her-name's house for the first 40 minutes or so, is I knew that you would be excited by that.
Also, I really thought they were going to take that character of what's-her-name, Loretta, the girl.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were going to take her further before they wrapped that up somehow.
And we should actually say there's a little bit of a spoiler alert here. So if you didn't see Justified last night, if you wish to remain spoiler free, I mean, it's not like it's not like some Usual Suspects thing where it's going to ruin the show for you or whatever. But there are things that happen. The thing about it is, don't you and I have talked about this before, that is a recent, not innovation, but a thing that has become more prevalent in television, where whether a character just is written out or leaves the show or has their storyline resolved or is killed or whatever, that happens much more unpredictably than it used to, and much more often than it used to.
Yeah, I also wonder if they didn't think they were going to do something else with her character and carry her through further, and then somehow just decided that they didn't want to go in that direction, so kind of decided to wrap it up quicker. But abrupt to me.
The moment that last night that I found that was just, I mean, there were several cringe inducing moments, but there was that where she's sitting there with what's his name, the guy with the hammered hand, and
Cooper.
Yeah, and he's trying to pay her compliments, and he keeps saying things like, "Well, you know, she just hung a medal on you like you were a prize-winning pig at the county fair," and he's like three of those things in a row. And you know what that show does really, really well with that whole side, that whole family. It just that show imparts a real sense of like claustrophobic ick when you're in that house. Because Mags Bender, she's really the mom is really the only smart one of the whole crew, and all of her kids are just imbeciles. But they're imbeciles that are sort of big and angry and methed up all the time, and they do give you that sense of like you're stuck in a room with a guy who might punch you, might give you a raping, might shoot you, might leave you alone. You just don't know.
Might give you a raping, said Rick Emerson.
it's an unpredictable show. I think Dawn's phone is just is opting not to communicate with us today.
Hmm. Well, I don't watch Justified, so I can't really participate in the conversation.
I'm going to give this one more try here, and then we'll she probably didn't hear anything. So anyway, and that's why we don't like Dawn. Oh, hello, Dawn.
Hi. I tried moving to a different part of the house. We'll see what happens now.
Well, anyway, I don't know what the last thing you heard, but I was just making the point that there's that whole sequence where he's talking to her and he says that, you know, he's like, well, Ma put that ribbon on you like you were a prize-winning pig or whatever. And he's clearly trying to compliment her. And then he says a thing later on about, I don't know, he compared her to being like, you know, ain't you the cutest little bunny or whatever. And he's just creepy. And the show does a really good job of making you feel the unsettled sort of fear of being in a house with a bunch of methed up rednecks, which sounds dumb, but it's a very strange sort of invasive, like anything could go wrong at any moment feeling that they convey really well.
And I've said this before, but I'm loving this character of Mags Bennett because she is so tough and so hard and so scary. But then you get that sense at the end of the show, she, in her own insanely twisted way, she actually really does love that girl. But it's just, she's nuts and evil.
Well, there's that there was that great sequence where she's where she's talking to the woman from the Black Pitch Mine project or whatever, and there's the two of them kind of facing off about it. And it's, we said this before when we talked to Joelle Carter, that I really do like. I like shows that are the thing that this show does is that they have these strong female characters that don't feel like it doesn't smack of tokenism. It's not as though they've just been slotted in as strong female character number two or number three. It was like, what's her name, who played the agent in the FBI agent Stahl in Sons of Anarchy, where it never felt like it was stunting, like they were trying to shake things up a little bit. But she's tough and she's a lady. It seems really organic, and it does so as well on Justified, where it doesn't feel like they're contriving it in any way.
How do you like the direction this is going in?
The thing about Justified that I like a lot is even when you can see the gears turning, it's a really enjoyable program, and they're doing that as sort of a season arc as well within, and they're doing it within each episode. They did the thing again last night where the entire episode they're basically ramping up all this dread and all this tension, and then you wait for the big sort of cathartic payoff in the final like 6 or 7 minutes where it always comes out to Raylan Givens just pulling out his gun, pistol whipping a guy, and then standing on his neck sort of Harry Callahan style and saying, where is she? You know, and it's like, and it should feel so manipulative and it should just feel so trite that they do that. But there is just something about that show that makes it work, and it surpasses the level at which it ought to function. So I'm actually liking it a lot. I'm liking it more than I liked last season. And I liked last season quite a bit.
Yay.
I was worried
we lost Dickie, though. I was very worried for a few minutes that they were cutting Dickie short.
So. I'm curious to see how they tie together all of the different story threads, because there's that whole thing about Winona having stolen the money and the whatever. But, I feel pretty confident that they'll bring it all together, because they did that last year as well, where they had the different stories going off in every direction. I will also say that sequence where Mags Bennett is talking to the woman from the Black Pitch Mine Company, that was the sequence that felt... Cheryl said that the Justified felt like a sort of a backwards version of The Wire, and that is the sequence that felt the most Wire-like so far, because it is you know, it's the two characters who are in charge of sort of warring dynasties that must, to some degree, either learn to coalesce. They have to either get along, or it's just going to end up being bad for everybody. But you honestly don't know when they're sitting in that room if they're going to come to any sort of an agreement or not, or if it's just going to end in violence. And the show is still unpredictable at its core, which I like a lot.
Yes, I agree.
You're just distracted by cheese. You don't care. All right.
Hey, my hands are sticky.
Hey,
what
Dawn,
can I say?
Dawn Taylor, remember at Mormon Book Club where we were like, hey, we should hang out? And I was like, hey, there are movies. You should go to one. You're like, yeah, I'll be there. And then remember how you didn't go to any?
I remember that.
Yeah, Arthur was even at the theater by your house Monday night.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just saying. A single tear rolled down my cheek as you were not there to sit next to me.
You're like an old Indian by the side of the road.
I was exactly like that. Exactly.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I let you down and I was a bad friend.
Well, it's okay. You're not a bad friend. You're just a bad person.
Well done. It's Dawn Taylor. Her hands are sticky, so we're going to let her go. All right. We will see you again tomorrow, Dawn Taylor. All right,
okay, see you tomorrow.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
I think the universe is trying to tell us something there when it disconnected the call like four times in a row.
So. I love Dawn Taylor, you know.
You got to listen to the still small voice when it talks to you. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Show right here at the Emerson News Network. It's 503-505-6964. Tomorrow, Dawn Taylor returns as well as Mr. Big Jim Willig. He'll be in the studio with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Mr. Eric D. Snyder is with us today. You will be heard tomorrow talking on Cascadia.fm from 11 to noon, Movie BS with Baron Snyder. What is on your agenda, sir?
Well, tomorrow we got the new films Hannah and Arthur. And that other one, Hannah and Arthur are the two big ones. And then, why can't I remember the name of the third one?
I don't know.
Your Highness.
Oh, yeah. So what? Now, I don't want to give, you know, the spoilers or have you, if there's something embargoed. Here's the thing. Like, first of all, Arthur, I mean, I'm sort of indifferent to the original Arthur.
Sure.
I mean, it's, you know, it's there. And I guess it's, we got together. We had a few laughs, whatever.
Exactly.
It's not like I'm upset about it, but it does seem like the definition of a pointless remake. I mean, it's just
kind of, yeah. Although I can see the point that the first movie is fondly remembered, but it's not a great movie by any means.
Many movies fondly remembered are not that good,
and it was sort of a vehicle for Dudley Moore,
right,
and John Gielgud. But the basic structure of it, you could see plugging someone else into that same scenario, and Russell Brand is kind of a good fit for the drunken playboy. Like, that's the kind of character he does well.
Right.
The movie's not great, but it's all right. So it's not, you know, and it's not like it's that original idea. Hey, there's a rich playboy who squanders his money and drinks a lot.
Is he still drunk in the new one? I heard that they were going to turn down the drinking a little bit.
Interesting. If to look at the ads and the trailers, you wouldn't particularly know that he's a drunk. He is a fall down drunk. Like,
really?
It's all about him being drunk and an alcoholic, and he's drunk all the time. But in the ads, they play it down.
Well, good. Well, I'm glad that they kept that in the movie, because there was this – when Arthur 2 On the Rocks came out, and one of the big – that was sort of – that would have been, what, 92-something, 90-something? It was the early 90s, I think, when Arthur 2 came out.
Was it that long after the first one?
I don't think it could have been.
The first one was 81.
Maybe. I mean, it was like within – I mean, it was either the late 80s or the early 90s. But one of the – but it was sort of at the first cresting of what we came to call the –
88.
The sort of PC wave. And one of the knocks that you read about Arthur too a lot was, you know, like, well, you know, being drunk just isn't funny. It's a social ill about which – and it was like we weren't allowed – and it wasn't a good movie. But apart from that, it was like even if it had been, we weren't allowed to find it funny because it was about something that in another context is bad.
Remember for a while when Barney on The Simpsons quit drinking?
No.
There was a few years where he got clean and sober,
I don't remember that.
It was within the last 7 or 8 years, and so not as many people watched it.
And was there some sort of social pressure? Was it somebody at the network?
I don't know. I don't know what made them do it. But then finally they got over it and had him fall off the wagon, and now he's back to being drunk Barney again.
Yeah, somebody, look, things that happen to you in real life and things that happen, you know, to somebody else on a movie screen, two different things. You don't want to fall into a sewer in real, you know, in real life. You know, on screen, hilarious.
Exactly. Yeah.
So chicken guts left on your on your porch in Detroit, not funny. Discussed here in the studio, fantastically hilarious.
They were sheep guts, actually.
Sheep guts, sorry.
Chicken guts would be obscene.
That's right. That would be. And I'm glad to see Jennifer Garner still getting work, by the way, because she's in the Arthur remake, right?
She is,
And it's like, and the thing is, I just always root for her because of Alias, and it's like she can't really act. She does that thing of squinching up her forehead and looking like she's going to cry real
She's adorable. She looks like Fievel the Mouse from America's Goes West.
Doesn't she? She really does.
Yeah.
She, as somebody once said about, I think it was Sinead O'Connor, of all people, that this was said about, said that you just want to take her home and give her a bowl of soup. Because she just always looks like she's upset about something. She's had a terrible day at school. And that's the thing with Jennifer Garner. So I like to see her continuing to be cast in things that she clearly isn't good enough to be in.
Right.
But, you know, look, people keep hiring me. People keep hiring her. We have to stick together. So there's Hannah. Arthur, and then
Your Highness.
So here's a question I have about Your Highness, and that's the thing with. In fact, we started the show by playing some Eastbound and Down.
Oh yeah, Danny McBride.
Mr. Danny McBride. He's not the reason I avoided Land of the Lost. I avoided Land of the Lost because I was a big fan of the television show growing up, and he was an unknown quantity to me at the time. I knew Will Ferrell, but I didn't really know him.
Right.
And I thought, well, it's Will Ferrell and some guy. I'm not going to watch this. Then later, I saw Foot Fist Way. And then I saw Observe and Report, and then Eastbound and Down. And so I sort of was like soaking in the works of Jody Hill, and Danny McBride shows up in a lot of those. And I gained a really profound respect for him as a comedic performer. And I heard him – there's a podcast called – it's called the – I think it's the Screenwriters Workshop, or it's the it's Screenwriters – Screenwriters, you know – Clatch or something, but it's a guy just he will talk to the screenwriters about, and it what makes it interesting is it's about a specific project. It's not like about their career, but it's they'll do it like an hour talking about, in this case,
how you wrote this movie or whatever.
Yeah, he and McBride and Jody Hill did an hour talking about Eastbound and Down.
Interesting.
And but at one point when I was watching the Red Band trailer for Your Highness when it came out, I asked, I think Aaron Duran was showing it to me, I said, what is the deal with this? Is this movie a parody? Is this a sort of like if Leslie Nielsen were still alive, he'd be making this, but it's got boobs? Or is it an homage? Or because McBride in an interview said that he wasn't trying to make a parody. He said they were trying to make like a straight up like adventure film with cussing. And it doesn't seem like that.
Yeah, it's not. I wouldn't call it a parody. It's not straight up a parody. It is. It's in the style of the cheesy early 80s sword and sandal movies like your Conan the Barbarian and Kroll. Cole the Conqueror and all those things. It's in that style, but it doesn't really satirize them. It just sort of is one of those. But yeah, everyone cusses a lot. Someone described it as it's the kind of movie, if you grew up watching those movies, it's the kind of movie that you would make if you and your 13-year-old buddies got together and made it. Like heavy on the boobs, heavy on the cussing.
But they don't. I mean, they don't do the thing of sort of passively acknowledging that, like, hey, we're in a zany adventure film.
No,
I mean they play it straight.
No, they play it straight. It straight, pretty much. Yeah. And it's actually really disappointing. It's the kind of thing either is going to make you laugh your ass off or not.
Does it depend on how stoned you are?
That probably would help.
I figured Your Highness.
It makes most things funnier, actually, being stoned. Having seen it not stoned or drunk or anything, a couple of laughs, but just a lot of, oh, they said the F word and they're in medieval times. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I wanted to be excited about the sort of thing that I like. I really was. I was into the idea of liking it, but I suspect that I probably wouldn't, in actuality, like
it. Yeah, it's not very good, unfortunately.
All right. Mm. I don't even know what Hannah is.
It's about a girl who trained assassin.
Oh,
around. It's like
what we're saying.
It's Baby Born. It's like Jason Bourne, but she's a teenager.
All right then. Good.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
All right, fantastic. No, you have me. Yeah, no, girl assassin. Mm-hmm. I'm there. All right, hold on. Hannah, excellent. I want to touch on something you said at the top of the show before we'll do a watch. We'll do the Geek Watch. We'll do the top five. And then at that point...
will we?
We'll all go to lead a life of religious fulfillment elsewhere. The top of the show, we were talking about Keanu Reeves. And you said that that Bill and Ted 3... Because that's the thing that I hadn't heard... I mean, I'd never heard of even the whisper of it. And then like in the last week, I've seen, I don't know, 3-4 different pieces of people saying that he has signed on to do it, or that everybody has signed to do it.
Well, that's the thing. You've seen 3 or 4 different pieces all repeating the same one bit of information, which is that he said something. And this is the curse of the movie blogs, is that they tend to just sort of, they'll say it was reported by this place, who got it from somewhere else. And so you have 100 sites writing the one thing, and that one thing was just some guy talking out of his butt.
But writing their own context around it, and the context usually misleading and overstating.
Right. I guess he said that they're like 6 weeks away from having a screenplay written. I guess the writers, it's the same writers from before who are...
Ed Solomon and other guy.
The other guy, yeah. But what it sounds like to me is that is that probably they've got some other project coming up and they just wanted to mention it. It strikes me right away, right off the bat, as, oh, this is going to be like Ghostbusters 3 or Arrested Development or any of these other movies that they've been talking about forever.
That never actually happened.
Yeah, or like The Hobbit. I'm still not convinced The Hobbit's going to happen.
The Ghostbusters 3 thing I long ago wrote off as a thing that wouldn't happen and that I probably wouldn't want to watch if it did.
Yeah, exactly. I think there actually is a script written, but Bill Murray just kind of doesn't. Bill Murray is kind of crazy and just kind of won't read it and won't commit to it. They don't want to do it without him.
Well, and it's, you know, and
it's probably, he's probably a hero for that.
And
for
I think the at least two iterations of the Ghostbusters 3 script, I think, had to do with what we might call the Lil Ghostbusters syndrome,
yeah.
Where it was like while you know while Venkman and the and Egon are trying to save the town, simultaneously on the other side of town there was like this sort of weird monster squad thing going on where there's a subplot with like their kids having to battle like this monster of their own, and it became, which is my immediate fear with the Bill and Ted sequel as well. And frankly, and I know that I'm alone in this, but I didn't really care for the second one except for what's his name Sadler as Death.
Oh yeah,
I mean
yeah.
That was really the sole selling point.
That's the one thing I remember is Death.
That's the only thing anybody remembers, but they sort of meld the two movies because of the two characters together in their heads.
Right.
And really the second one was just the second one was like the big top Pee-wee of that franchise. It just where you wanted to like it because of the lead character, but it was just mm-hmm. but it was not a good film in any way.
Yeah. And I don't think a third Bill and Ted is a good idea.
No.
I mean, they're 20 years older.
Yeah.
And one of them may not even exist anymore. The one who's not Keanu Reeves.
Do you get the sense? I was just going to say that Alex Winter is like working at a plaid pantry somewhere and just going,
nobody wants this movie to happen more than he does.
I mean, really, it's like, you know, I wonder how many films, you know, the production of them gets sparked or there's some sort of discussion that gets triggered because a guy just plants a quote somewhere hoping that if he just like – that like once it's in print, like that it just has to happen.
He can sort of will it into consciousness, into existence.
I used to work with salespeople like that. I mean, the radio salespeople are notorious for this, where they will just actually – they would not actually get anything cleared by the general manager or the program director or anything. They would just like – they would be talking with a client and the client would request something like, hey, can we just name the studio after this porn store that I run? And the salesperson would be like, no problem, GL. I'll take care of it. And so then you would just come into the studio and there would be this like crudely – like badly written 3x5 card on the back glass right above the control board that would just say – the studio, by the way, is now the Pornopolis, you know, rock studio. Please refer to it as that from now on. And it was like they never cleared it with anybody. They would just sort of try to get it on the air once because they assumed that once it was on the air, it had to continue. The inertia alone would carry it through.
Tap, tap, tap. Made a new rule.
Has Alex Winter been in anything?
I'm looking at him right now. He's done voice work and some animated stuff here and there. But no. Well, like the last movie he was in was in 1997.
But is he at least – here's what – you know
he's done some voice work recently but not a lot.
Here's the thing that makes me happy. Hmm. There's not a lot that makes me happy in this world, but one of those things is this. When you see somebody who is like an Alex Winter – I just forgot his name, but we were just talking about him
Alex
5 seconds
Winter.
Ago. Alex Winter.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say Alex Cross, but I think he's a fictional detective from the James Patterson novels.
I believe you're right.
When you hear about an Alex Winter – guy or somebody like that, and you think, oh God, where what even happened to that guy? But then you see that he's become like a successful director of commercials, or he's made a lot of money in voiceover, or he's become a screenwriter, or a writer on some sitcom, and he's making a lot of money.
Or is a real estate agent and has a fine career in the Midwest with his wife and kids, or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, there's the guy who plays Chunk in the Goonies, who's like some incredibly powerful Hollywood lawyer now.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And I saw that little documentary on him, and what's it like to be Chunk? And he's like, and he's just like sitting at this huge walnut desk with like these like solid like these huge massive gold cufflinks that are just ingots. And he goes, well, it's okay. I'm pretty zen with it now. And he's in an office looking out at Beverly Hills behind him, and you're thinking, I bet you are.
Yeah.
So I'm always happy for guys like that because it's almost never the case. Don't you think that somebody? Okay, let me ask you this, just between us.
Yeah.
Why hasn't somebody done a movie where they just cast all of the Alex Winter type guys? Like you get him, you get that Philip Michael Thomas guy from Miami Vice, soundtrack by Andrew Ridgely. I mean, you just put them all in one movie and it's just called The Other Guy.
The Other Guys, yeah.
I'm telling you right now.
But yeah.
You just get that Apatow factory working on that right now. You have a movie by the end of the day. Or those jagoffs who make the, Not Another Whatever movie.
Right.
Give them a ladder to climb out of that sewer they're in and just give them this idea instead.
That's a good idea.
I'm telling you right now, you, Okay, that is, by the way, that was at 3:21 Pacific time.
That is, by definition,
April 7th.
By definition, people who will not be hard to get a hold of and get them to do the job.
That's
it's not like putting together the Expendables where you got to get like all these big shots.
Totally. And it's like, you know, and they're not going to be hard to get a hold of. It's not like the agent's going to be able to really hold you up for like, you know, and I need 15% of the gross off the top. No, I mean, it's...
We want a bowl of Cheez-Its. The real stuff, not the reduced fat.
Yeah, you just point to the craft services table and go, as soon as you sign, those Slim Jims are yours.
Yeah.
All right.
That's
I'm just
a good
saying.
Idea.
That's a, you're right. You heard me come up with that idea right here.
No, yeah. Right.
You can have that idea. Here's the thing. I will grant you, the rights to that idea. You
Thank
may
you.
Have that.
Well, it practically writes itself.
You just you let Rick Emerson wait to speak a little bit. Okay. All right, let's. Do we have a Geek Watch here?
Yes, we have a Geek Watch.
Well, you've got
here
actual stuff to do. You've got like places to be.
I don't know what time the show usually ends.
It ends when. Look,
when
I am the
does.
Law in the studio. It ends when I feel like ending.
All right.
Usually it ends between 3:30 and 4. Now, that is when Sarah and Greg are taping in the afternoon. Mm. When they tape in the morning, for good or bad, there is no governor on this. There's no. There are no brakes. This train rolls downhill on grease rails towards a. I lost it there at the end.
Oh,
toward a thing.
Toward a thing that a thing on grease rails would run toward. Toward
that.
A bubbling cauldron of...
Whores.
Whores. A bubbling cauldron of whores.
Like a bubbling cauldron of whores. The Rick Emerson Show. Don't miss it.
That's probably what the Britney Spears concert was like, wasn't it? A bubbling cauldron of whores?
Yes. Here's the thing about the Britney Spears concert, by the way. I am at pains to mention this because I never got to this. I guess it was in Legion of News. We ran out of time.
Right at the end.
And that's right when the Ed Foreman show started blasting over the top of us like for no reason. The thing about the Britney Spears show is that, like, first of all, you realize how totally irrelevant she is to that actual thing. Like, just as she is to her actual, to the music. I mean, maybe she's really singing the records. Maybe she's not. It doesn't really matter. To me, it's like I'm all about the songcraft and the construction of the pop. Because most of her songs and most of her hits are written by a guy named Max Martin.
Mm-hmm.
And Max Martin, who probably nobody has – the average person has probably never heard of Max Martin. But anybody – even if you weren't really a fan, anybody who lived in that era of NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, 98 Degrees, Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera – probably 80% of the songs that you heard during that era were written by one guy.
Yeah.
And they were written by a Swedish songwriter and producer named Max Martin, who is just like, I mean, he's just got like the freaking like Jedi ability with writing stuff
the
like
Irving
that.
Irving Berlin of his day.
He really, he just sits there and he just like with a wave of his hand, it just churns out like one hit after another, which is not easy to do.
No.
Creating little 3-minute songs that just stick in your head. And so I was really a fan of her, of Britney Spears, of her singles, of her songs, like from the minute she came out. And of course, there was also the thing with Britney Spears of like every tour you figured might be her last because they were going to, you know, find her just, you know, like face deep in sputum at some point and then she wasn't going to be touring anymore.
Right.
And
they just sent her out on the face deep in sputum tour.
They should actually – somebody should really do a tour somewhere one of these days where when a pop icon dies – they literally just send his corpse out, and it's like they just put it on stage, and everybody kind of comes out and sings and dances, and then some dwarves twirl around it, and then you go home. But I told my wife, I'm like, baby, she could be dead at any moment. We got to go now.
It's true.
Except I was like, that's a slice of pop culture that I want to make sure that I can say that I saw it when it was at its apogee. So. So we went to the MGM Grand in Vegas to see her on the circus tour, which was an amazing show. And again, she had – I mean, you could have at any point just removed her. She was probably gone from the stage for half the time, but
you didn't even notice. Plug any attractive young woman into the moves and
– Well, and plus the circus tour, and I don't know how she's doing it now, but it was pretty obviously inspired by things like Cirque du Soleil.
Right.
And it had this really bizarre, like really dark sort of German like –
Like a cabaret kind of thing?
Like a cabaret, but like this Hieronymus Bosch version of cabaret where everything was like black and red and like and sort of demonic. And I'm not a guy who's really like Cirque du Soleil is a thing and I'm sort of indifferent to. I mean, having seen stuff like that, I mean, it's impressive and I couldn't do it, but it's not really a thing that's entertaining to me most of the time. And this was really like mind-blowingly good. And I think the Vegas show was probably the same show that most people got. And it was really amazing to watch. But I did at one point, I looked at her and said, is Britney Spears still here? Because we couldn't figure out if she just like left or not. What was my point? Why was I talking about Britney Spears?
I have no idea.
I must have had some reason.
Well, I said bubbling cauldron of whores. It was like the concert, and then you said, oh, that reminds me.
Oh, and you said that's what the Britney Spears concert was, like the bubbling
color. But I don't know why you brought up the concert again.
Yes, it was.
All right.
End.
When do we start the actual show? When are we done with the run-through?
If I had a nickel for every consultant or program director who asked me the same... No. When does the guy you really hired, when does he actually get here? All right. Let's do the Geek Watch. Here's your Geek Watch for
High-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to...
Just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but... Because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen on this.
There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn shit. You got it?
Energize.
And plus, then I got this in my right nostril. I have this nose hair that's tickling. So everybody try not to be distracted by that.
Okay.
By everybody, I mean you. Here's Mr. Eric D. Snyder at the news desk.
Well, yeah, there's a big geek war going on, a feud between the author of Game of Thrones and the guy who did Lost, the TV show, Damon Lindelof. Do you know about this?
I don't. I mean, I know about Lost. I know about Game of Thrones. But here's the thing. I pulled the ripcord on Lost early, and I don't know that much about Game of Thrones.
Okay,
so.
I know nothing about Game of Thrones except that it is apparently just about to be an HBO miniseries or series or something.
Right.
They're making into something. But I had never heard of it. It's a fantasy novel, I guess. Here's what happened. The Game of Thrones author George R.R. Martin dissed Lost. Here's what he said in the New Yorker. Martin said that he felt cheated by the conclusion of Lost. And didn't want his Song of Ice and Fire series to cause the same sense of disappointment in his fans. Quote, I want to give them something terrific. What if I mess it up at the end? What if I do a Lost? They'll come after me with pitchforks and torches. So then Damon Lindelof, the Lost guy, went to the Twitter and to stand up for himself using some language that can't be printed here, wherever this came from. Apparently he did some cussing. And some choice nuggets of his tirade. George, you got yourself a feud. Also, I've just been informed George is working on his feud response. I'll have it in 5 years. I guess that's a good slam, like he takes a long time to write his books or something?
I guess, yeah.
I don't know.
Okay, by the way, I'm going to have to put this on. Okay, here's everything you need to know about Game of Thrones and George R.R. Martin, or R.R. Martin. I'm just going to turn this around.
You're going to show me a picture of George R.R. Martin?
I am.
Because I'm looking at one right now.
Oh, really? So you're looking at the picture on Wikipedia?
It was with the news story, but let me see yours.
But he's just, he looks, it's sort of like a Peter Jackson, like if he let himself go.
Yeah.
It's a, like with a long beard.
Yeah,
and
that's the one, yeah.
That's everything you need to know about that guy and everything you need to know to understand who reads his novels.
Well, yeah, I think that's probably right.
Which is not an insult, it's just an observation. You look at this guy and you know what he writes.
I take it as an insult. Lindelof also tweeted, two final thoughts, George. A, they weren't dead the whole time. B, 1997 called, it wants its web design back. Snap at George.
Game of Thrones, an upcoming American medieval fantasy television series created by David Benioff and Dan Weiss for HBO, based on George R.R. Martin's best-selling A Song of Fire and Ice series of novels, chronicles the violent dynastic struggles among noble families for control of the Iron Throne of Westeros.
Oh, my gosh.
And there you go.
Yeah, Lindelof's feelings were hurt because he's a big fan of Martin, and he's a little touchy about people still a year later complaining about the ending of Lost.
I swear to you, it's being described by HBO. I'm not making this up. It is being described by HBO as The Sopranos in Middle Earth.
Oh.
Here's, by the way, how you know that a show has a 50-50 chance of being... I mean, this is where it really is. It really is. It's the flip of the coin where the show could either be brilliant or the show could be, like, the worst thing that you've ever seen. HBO hired expert language creator David J. Peterson from the Language Creation Society to develop the Dothraki language.
Wow.
So that right there is, I mean, unless you're really, really bent on watching it, I might wait and just get some sort of a consensus from your peers on that before
That is a weird thing to be an expert in, making up languages.
Somebody's noted that Game of Thrones is effing fantastic. Also, F that Lost guy. So, all right. I just, I'm sure that there's, when I hit about, I don't know, like 14, 15, 16 for some reason, I did the opposite of what most guys do. I read a lot of fantasy, and I still read sci-fi, but I read a lot of fantasy when I was younger, when I was growing up. And then when I hit my teenage years, For all intents and purposes, I quit reading fantasy. And it's not like I disdain it or I dislike it or something. I think it's the opposite with most guys, where it's like you hit 13 or 14 and you really develop, like, that's when it's solidified. That's when your love of, you know, you're sitting and just reading Piers Anthony novels or something. That's when it really gets forged, because it speaks to so much of the adolescent male desire in some ways.
Right.
And for me, it was the opposite. So I'm really out of touch with anything that has to do with, you know, if there's a guy wielding a sword or, you know, talking about, you know, saying like "Hail the victorious dead" or something.
I don't think I've ever read a fantasy novel. I don't think
you haven't read. Did you not read Lord of the Rings?
No, I started to read The Hobbit and couldn't get into it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What was the genre in which you most dwelt as a reader growing up?
What did I read? Mostly what I was assigned in school, I guess. So, you know, Catcher in the Rye and stuff like that.
Well, you're like joy personified.
I know.
Me read.
You know, I mean, I enjoyed reading, but I don't. It wasn't a particular genre that stuck out. It was just kind of, you know, whatever.
Okay. You know? Just whatever happens to be sitting there. Reader's Digest, yeah. Condensed books. Well, I'm sold.
The house was lousy with them.
Yeah, actually, me too, actually. I snark about that, but many of the books that I read early on in my life were the Reader's Digest condensed books. Because you're a kid, you don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't even really know what condensed meant. I mean, it's sort of the vaguest idea, but, you know.
It meant shorter, I guess.
Yeah.
Sure.
Here's a little thing, a little fun fact for me to you. So, you know, there's that on 39th, there's that Swingers Club, 39th and Powell, the Angels Social Club there.
I didn't know that, but okay.
Oh, please. Don't be coy with me. It's one of those places, like, if you live in Portland long enough, you will hear people use it as a landmark when they're giving you directions. So you go up to 39th, and it's by that Swingers Club, but it's not there. It's down the street further, like, and to the right. If you go to the Swingers Club in 39th and Powell, inside, and there's this sort of – and the weird thing about that place, I mean, apart from, you know, everything, is that it was once just a private residence, which they then, I think, turned into – like a restaurant some years ago, and then eventually it was purchased by this group and made it a club where they are swingers, as in to swing. Sarah and myself and our producers, our PA at the time, Richie Bristol, took a tour through there because we were like ruminating about it on the air. And so they gave us this sort of like tour during the day when it was not, you know, open for
– when there was no swinging going on.
No, it was not open for business. But we just walked – but it's strange to be in this like sex club that still is built on the blueprint of and has all of the ornamentations, or a word like that, of a house.
Right.
It's like a fireplace, and it's like, you know, and there's a, you know, we can see where the kitchen area was. Mm-hmm. And then in the front, in the living room with the fireplaces, they've left the bookcases there, and the guy, he said with obvious pride, he goes, "And this part of the house has been left exactly the way it was 35 years ago, and it's just filled with Reader's Digest condensed books." I don't know why, but I just found that was the most compelling detail of the entire place to me, is that the Swingers Club is filled with Reader's Digest condensed books, all missing the paper sleeves. None of them had the slip covers. It was all just like the regular hardback cover.
Right.
That wasn't nearly as interesting as it seemed like it was going to be when it was in my head.
I'm sort of more interested in Swingers Clubs now, but we can save that for another day.
We're a resource for that, you know.
Yeah.
And then Sarah, I think I'd had my fill at that point, but Sarah then later on went to the opening of of Ron Jeremy's Swingers Club, his Club Sesso or whatever. So she's gone there, so she can really, you know, anything you want to know, where you just come right. You know, questions, we've got answers.
Good to know.
Yeah,
good to know.
And Geek Watch for Thursday. Or was that? Are we done? Were we done with the Geek Watch?
I believe we were. Yeah, I mean, that was the gist of it. The feud between the two nerds.
By Grabthar's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next. Loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
And you have the top five in front of you. Do you have that? Do I need to print that out? Or have you got that?
I've got it. Yeah.
All right. Before we do the top five, I'll remind you that if you find the something. If you find Eric D. Center amusing, and I know you do, you can hear him tomorrow. That is 11 a.m. Friday till noon at Cascadia.fm as a co-host of Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. You can also read him at film.com or at ericdsnyder.com. And without further ado, here is his top five.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire!
Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous. Counting.
You're giggling
nice
to yourself.
I haven't done one of these before.
Haven't you been here for the top five?
I seemed like I was once when Dawn was here, but I wasn't in charge of it, so I wasn't. You know, I didn't get the format down.
Yeah, this is the thing that we've used for the longest time. This Sesame Street bed, and apparently when I was in New York a couple weeks ago, and I handed the show off to Dawn for a week, and.
Right.
She ended up doing the show. I get on Friday. It was like Dawn and I think Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week and our friend Jim Willig. And apparently they all did a drunken like a cappella version of the top five theme, which I keep meaning to dig out so
nice.
I can keep meaning to excerpt that. So
use
I
that,
can,
yeah.
All right. So these are the top five songs to which you would mope when you were a sullen, embittered, angst-ridden
right.
youth.
Yeah.
Just sort of lurking around inside the castle and, you know, and just shaking your fist at God from on top of a silver mountain.
Yeah.
And saying, why must my mortal existence be saddled with such strife?
Exactly those things, yes.
And then just sitting in your room with the blinds drawn and listening to, you know,
yeah.
Thin Lizzy records or something.
Well, now, the thing about me as a kid, as a young teenager, is that I didn't listen to a ton of pop music. I've talked to you before about my Dr. Demento phase, and I was sort of obsessed with the comedy, the novelty records. And so that was mostly what I listened to, was like Dr. Demento kind of stuff.
Drowning your sorrows in shaving cream?
Well, like that, but then there were, I would occasionally be struck by these pop songs, because obviously, as you implied, the comedy songs aren't going to do much for the...
Only Barnes and Barnes can...
Yeah.
Heal me now.
But I was certainly sensitive to the charms of the moody pop songs.
Well, and especially when you're a teenager where, you know, as I think Chuck Klosterman noted, it's like you, to some degree, in some ways you don't ever love certain music or certain kinds of music or bands the way you did when you were a teenager because you don't love anything. You don't feel anything
right.
the way you felt
yeah,
it when you
no,
were a teenager.
It's true. It's true.
And so it's like you're like, you don't know, Hobbit reference, you're like the dragon Smaug where you have a missing scale and that is the place that can be pierced by the arrow.
Yes.
Except when you're a teenager, you're just nothing but like nerve endings. That's all you are. You're just like a... And it sounds like a knock on teenagers, and it's really not, because it's really not that teenagers get a lot of flack, I think, from people who have, not that like I'm some, you know, like mouthpiece for the young or whatever, but you know, it's like you kind of forget what it was like, and I think it's just the fact that you are flat out clinically crazy
yeah.
when you're a teenager. It's not that teenagers are dumb or stupid or obnoxious or anything or so, any of those things as such. It's just that you're like literally, like chemically, clinically
yeah.
like nuts.
Yeah.
You know, and so you are just like one raw nerve ending that is exposed and being stomped on
right.
or stimulated somehow all the time, which is why you can do things like I had this friend of mine when I was in the I won't use her name, but because I know she I think actually lives in Portland now. Mm. But when she was an angst-ridden youth, she had this tape and it was the Metallica song. Kids, Metallica is a band that young people used to listen to and care about. But she had this Metallica song, Fade to Black, which is this whole rumination on suicide, of course.
Right.
And it was a 90-minute tape that it was just that song over and over and over and over again for 90 minutes, which is the sort of thing that makes perfect sense when you're a teenager. You know?
Yeah.
You're like, that's exactly what my mood needs today. I'm going to sit in a closet and I'm going to write Plathian poetry to myself and I'm just going to play Fade to Black over and over again for like 7 hours.
Sure.
And it
sure.
seems like a perfectly reasonable response to like, you know, that like, a boy didn't talk to you that day
right.
or something.
Well, it's not that it seems reasonable. It's that whatever has happened is so unreasonable that it calls for an equally unreasonable over-the-top reaction. Yeah,
yeah, because no one knows your pain.
Exactly.
No one understands. No one knows the sorrow of this cruel existence
yeah.
as I do.
Yeah. Like my number five song, for example, I heard on Days of Our Lives.
What is your number five song?
It's Nothing's Gonna Change My Love for You by Glenn Medeiros.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's a...
I haven't heard this in a very long time.
So, did you listen to these last night when you were putting the list together, or today?
No, I didn't. I just
so you some of these you haven't heard.
I have not heard
for
yet.
A long time.
I had to live my life without you near me. The days would all be empty.
I still know the words.
I can just picture you looking at a rain-slicked window.
Basically, yeah. And this was used on the soap opera Days of Our Lives. It was the love theme for Patch and Kayla. Patch with the eye patch.
Wow.
Steve was his name. And I watched Days of Our Life for like one summer when I was like 13. And this was their love song. And it was a pop song. And so I tracked it down. I had to ask around to find out like what the song was. There was no internet.
You had to hum to, hey, it's the song. It goes,
exactly.
Nah, nah, nah,
exactly,
nah, nah.
Yeah. And I found it and I bought the album. And yeah, Glenn Medeiros.
After a year of watching that show, did you go, wait a minute, this isn't very good?
Only a summer is that all it took.
Love for you. You want to know my I love you.
Yeah.
One thing you can be sure of, I've never asked for more than
the thing in the 80s, everybody's singing inside a cavern.
Yeah.
Just drench it in echo.
I know there was a video for this, but I don't remember what was going on. Yeah, Glenn Medeiros, Hawaiian fella.
And the presence of saxophone gives away exactly where this is from, yeah.
Yes, yes. So that happened.
The road ahead is not so easy. Our love will need a way.
Have you noticed this? How many of these mid-tempo ballads from the 80s sound as though they were originally written for like some Christian contemporary act, like for Michael W. Smith, and they're just going through his discard pile and trying to find things like this.
And you don't have to change the words, because this could equally be about Jesus.
Absolutely.
Oh, Glenn.
No. We're not moving on quite yet. We're going to wallow for just one more chorus.
All right.
Hold me now. Touch me now. Nothing's gonna change my love for you. You wanna know, I know how much I love you.
See, and again, it's easy to poke fun. It's easier for me to go Glimaderos. Yeah. But it's like,
it's catchy.
I have no doubt that for any number of people, you know, in the 80s or wherever, that they would hear the song and it was like, only Glenn knows how you feel.
Well, and because I had heard it on Days of Our Lives, so I was associated with the tender, poignant romance of those characters. Coupled with my unromantic travails.
And you're just thinking to yourself, like, he knows what it's like. He's been there.
One thing I can be sure of, I'll never ask for more than your love.
The top five songs to which Eric D. Snider moped as a young, embittered adolescent. What is number four, sir?
Number four is not too different from that one. Right Here Waiting for You by Richard Marx.
Wow. This is a song I have not heard in a long time.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I learned, it's a piano song mostly, and I was at that point, I guess, about 15, I guess, 14 or 15, was learning to play the piano, so I bought the sheet music for it and learned to play it. And I would play this on the piano and thus be my own brooding, self-contained. I didn't need the recording, didn't need the record. He sounds a lot like Glenn Medeiros. Like, this could easily be another Glenn Medeiros number.
There was a drum in the background. When you were saying you hadn't heard some of these songs in a long time, I will say that I have not heard this song for a very long time. So I will say that this was, when you're not that this ends when you are no longer an adolescent, but, you know, when you're a teenager, you know, maybe this is our song.
Right.
And so this was actually the song, Twixt a Girl and I.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
This was your song with
somebody?
When
I was a teenager, yes. Ah. This was my song with
Susan.
Yes.
Whatever her name was.
And I think probably for that reason, as I sometimes say in my patented laughing when I feel like crying fashion, I often refer to her as somebody who deserved to do much better, and I think eventually did. But I think largely because of that association, I think I have in some level unconsciously avoided hearing this song for the last 15 or 20 years or whatever. It's like all that stuff that happens to you when you're a teenager, even though logically you get past it, or you're an adult, get jaded, or you toughened up by just, by disappointments or whatever, that all that stuff that, like, hits you before you develop all those, like, mental defense mechanisms, before you get the mental callus going on, that stuff, it's, like, just as weird and as, like, unsettling and as traumatic when you hear it, like, 30 years later or something.
And there's no reason that you would have heard this song since then. I mean, what radio stations do you listen to that would play this song, Charlie FM would play it.
Talk about Alex Winter being a director, a voiceover guy, Richard Marx, he just decided to retire to his manse and begin writing songs for other people.
Really?
So he's churned out like one hit after another for other people. Because he was a songwriter first, then became a performer, and then went back to being a songwriter.
And you can see how this song would tap right in, because it's so stoked. I will be right here waiting for you.
And the thing is, and so this for anybody who has seen, I did this one man show called Bigger Than Jesus, which is about. It's about growing up as a music fan, but there's a little sort of an autobiographical thread kind of woven through it. But for anybody who's seen Bigger Than Jesus, there's a whole sequence depicting my tumultuous relationship with this girl that we call Amy, not her real name, anyway, in that portion of my life. And we were, you know, and it was that thing we would like get together and break up and get together and break up.
Right.
And largely because I was just a jackass.
That's like me and heroin.
Exactly. And but she was a year older than I was.
Oh.
And so she graduated and like moved away.
Oh.
And, you know, but I was like a year behind. So I'm like stuck in this horrible, you know, hellhole little town that I loathed. And it was, you know, and it was that thing where like we, you know, you sort of you picture yourself being together forever and like this is the
right
whatever. And, you know, and then, yeah, she moved away, you know, like a year earlier. And so this was the song. And so anyway,
that's terrible. I also want to mention he has a perfect voice for this kind of song. It's that sort of
raspy,
aching, sort of.
It's a little gravelly, but not in a way that's going to be off-putting.
It's more like it's more sensual. Like I feel this so strongly.
It's a plaintive rasp.
Also, I wrote a parody of that song called called Weightlifting for You. You're right here, Weightlifting for You, about a guy who's getting buff for this girl. I did indeed, and sent it to Dr. Demetto.
Well done.
Play it though.
It just that goes in the B pile. Woo!
Number three.
Not very good.
You know, he just turned 70.
Yeah, we had him on the show.
No, that's right. Not
actually,
long ago,
yeah, and he's. But you know, it's like he as spry as ever.
Mm-hmm. Number three. I kind of hate this song, but yeah.
And yet,
November Rain by Guns N' Roses.
All right. I will just say full disclosure here. Full disclosure that my the big play button on my soundboard isn't working for some reason. I will say, in terms of full disclosure, I'm a huge Guns N' Roses fan, and this song is one of those things that this song sort of crosses cultural lines in that I know a lot of people who would Don I think actually who would never identify as a Guns N' Roses.
Oh yeah,
fan,
I'm not a Guns N' Roses fan at all.
But who love this song because this is one of those things where it's like the song stands apart from like you got to separate the thing from the
right.
thing, and it is a great, it's a beautiful, and this is when you hear Axl Rose talk about. He grew up in this very religious family. And he said the only pop music, the only secular music he was allowed to hear was Elton John.
Mm.
And you really, you hear something like this, and you hear that Funeral for a Friend kind of thing going on, and
that's
you really,
true.
You hear the huge Elton John influence on that guy.
And it's got the piano, which is something else that I loved.
Yeah.
I've always been a sucker for piano rock and piano ballads because I, you know, played the piano.
And so it's an epic, you know, which is great. It's sweeping.
Yeah, it's like 11 minutes long or something. We don't have to hear the whole thing, do we?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Now, when you say you kind of hate the song, now, what is that, and yet?
I think it's more that I kind of hate Guns N' Roses, I think is what it is. Or maybe I hate what they represent for, like, that part of my life, that sort of teenage dirtbag years.
Right.
Because I was not a teenage dirtbag, but I had friends who were, I had a brother who was. And so this is sort of part, Guns N' Roses were sort of part of my consciousness without really being a focal point, but this one song kind of stood out.
I you know, there's a lot of bands that I... music that I don't listen to, not because the song accompanied some specific bad incident, but because it takes me back to a time in my life that I don't really want to relive.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not the song's fault, it just happened to be that way.
And this is not even that I don't want to relive those times, it's just that those times were so weird and different, and like with friends that I, you know, obviously don't have anymore because it was 20 years ago, and it just, it's like reliving high school, which I don't care to do.
Right. And this is, you know, and so, yeah, so it's, and music is such a powerful trigger for that. I mean,
they always say
that, like, I think scent is the sense most strongly related to memory, but I think sound has got to be the, you know, because everybody has that thing where it's like you hear the song, and it's like in your head, it's like the little, the film reel starts playing of, like, the, you know, what that, you know, where you were,
mm-hmm.
you know, the.
Mm-hmm. One time I was at Magic Mountain in California, and Axl Rose was there.
Really?
Just as a.
As a guy
there with his buddies or whatever, and like we saw him in line once, and then also later we had to wait in an extra long line because they had shut down the ride to let him go up through the back to ride on it without all the masses around him.
Well, so what's the point of having power if you can't abuse it?
Well, I know, but that's when we started hating him.
F that guy. I wanted to go on Splash Mountain now.
Yeah.
Mr. Everett D. Snyder, who you can read more from and about and at. I don't know where I was going there. The prepositional thicket. EricDSchneider.com or film.com and tomorrow 11 to noon at Cascadia.fm. Part of Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. These are his top five teenage moping songs. What is number two, Eric Snyder?
Number two is At This Moment by Billy Vera and the Beaters.
Good for you. Well done.
Now, do you want to take a guess of where I got this song from?
I can't imagine. Family Ties.
What Family Ties, yes. It was the big thing. It was Alex and his girlfriend, who wound up being his wife in real life, right? Wasn't that her?
Tracy Pollan.
Yeah. and whatever her character was leaving or something, and they were breaking up, and it was very sad.
Her character Ellen was going off to study dance in Paris.
Oh, okay.
And she was going off to study dance in Paris, and of course he was not originally interested in Ellen. He was interested in Ellen's roommate, who he picked out of the Facebook, the the yearbook at the college.
Yeah, yeah.
He showed up and was dating the blonde roommate, and he and Ellen sort of met cute because she didn't like him.
Right.
And she, at their very first meeting, she correctly identified like 17 of his character traits, except for that he was a young Republican, and he noted to the hilarity of the studio audience, "I quit the Young Republicans last year." And then they continued to have edgy back and forth Dave and Maddie style banter until a dance at which he ended up dancing with Ellen, and that I have wasted my whole life.
I'm impressed.
He was dancing with Ellen while his girlfriend was off and then getting some punch or something, and it was because they were doing the fast dance, the sort of jerky 80s white person dance.
Sure.
And then the band transitioned to a slow song, and suddenly they were the only two people left in the dance floor, and it was awkward. And it was sort of the, well, I guess we might as well, we're standing here. And then they're like full on macking it out on the floor. And then after the song ends and they're making out, Ellen, of course, realized what she'd done. She runs off, like, to the ladies' room to powder her nose or to cry or whatever. Whatever girls do. And then Alex's blonde, bubbly girlfriend, who he has grown increasingly irritated by.
Right.
As personified and exemplified by the phrase, "She's cute and perfect and perky, and if I have to spend another minute with her, I'm going to strangle us both." Says, you know, "Where did Ellen go?" "I don't know. She was just here, and I didn't kiss her. She ran away." And says, "Well, didn't you hear? She got a scholarship. She's moving to Paris."
Oh!
Yeah.
Now, was this the song they were dancing to?
This was the song they were dancing to.
Because I also remember this song playing over the show as we're, like, seeing Alex being sad and whatnot. Like, this sort of was their song.
So this was the song that they kissed to.
Yeah.
And then, I believe it was a two-part episode.
Right.
So then later he goes to the bus station to wait for her to try to catch her to tell her not to go to Paris. And he has missed her, and this song is playing, and he's just unbelievably sad.
Yes.
There's a montage showing him listening at home, too.
That's what I'm remembering as a montage, yeah.
And then as he's sitting at the bus station being sad, she comes out of the ladies' room because it turns out that he hadn't missed her after all.
Oh,
so
yeah.
There you go. If I could just hold you. The thing is, I'm like you in that. Because this song is so melded with that show and with me being 12, 13, whatever.
Right.
I don't know. Somebody who'd never heard the song before and didn't have any history with it might hear the song and go, "Oh, it's corny, it's terrible, whatever."
Sure.
Maybe it is, maybe it's not. I honestly can't tell. I honestly don't know if it's a good or bad song or not.
I feel like it's a pretty good song, but yeah, I... Same thing as with Glenn Medeiros. I tracked it down, and I remember I bought the album through the Columbia Record Club. It was one of my selections.
So did I.
And everything else on the album, I didn't like anything. Didn't like any other songs in the album.
Okay, but did you... Okay, stop and get a hold of myself here. Such an idiot. I just literally was just like jittering with excitement there. Okay, I got my Billy Vera record from the Columbia Record and Tape Club too.
Yeah.
But did you get the same one I do that was the best of Billy Vera and the Beaters?
Yes,
and you're like, how is that possible?
Yeah, I've never heard of them, but they have a best of? Yeah, it was the best of, and it had this song.
All I remember is that one of the other songs on Billy Vera and the Beaters, it was called By Request, the best of. There's a song called Millie Makes Some Chili.
Yes, and there's also one called Peanut Butter.
Really?
Yeah, there was something about peanut butter.
All right.
Yeah.
Here's a little thing, just so you know, when the show is all done here and we've wrapped up for the day, I'm going to play that song again at the end, just because I want to hear it again. And because I wasted like 3 minutes of song talking about it. And then Alex is sitting at the bus station.
By the way, if you're a movie character should know by now, and TV characters, if you ever go to the bus station or the train station to stop someone from leaving and you find that the bus or train is just pulling away and you've missed them, in every single case, no, you haven't. You turn around, they're sitting there on the bench. They didn't go.
Can I tell
you? They have never actually gotten on the bus or train.
And here's just what a woman I am. Because a couple years later, they got rid of the character anyway.
Right.
She did leave, and then he ended up dating Courtney Cox. There was a whole thing where he kept trying to get Courtney Cox to be more like Ellen and whatever.
Yeah.
But because of that, which actually, and I remember my friends and I, we were like legitimately upset about it, that like they broke him and Errol. I'm so angry that they did that. But then when he turned out he married Tracy Pollan in real life, we all felt a sort of like, it's okay after all.
Thank goodness.
Because, you know.
Right.
Because I'm a retard. These are the top five songs to which Eric D. Snider would mope as a young person. What is number one, sir?
Number one is a song that I've never heard in any context other than me listening to it. Like, I've never heard this on the radio or anything, I don't think. It's I Know You're Out There Somewhere by the Moody Blues. And I think this is the only Moody Blues song that I even have any awareness of.
Now, I've heard this, but I don't know where.
Yeah, and the Moody Blues have been around for like 30 years, 40 years. They've done a million albums, right?
Yeah.
Well, this is the only thing of theirs that I know.
Has this been used in a... I'm sorry, my computer's freezing up. It's not cooperating. Has this been used in like a montage or something? Is it like some sort of a training sequence?
Probably.
In a... or like an I'm going to get that girl back?
Yeah, it's weird. Now I actually can't think of where I first heard it. It very well could have been Days of Our Lives again. That summer of 87. Formative summer. That
so they were heady times.
Yeah. And the reason it had so much significance for me was that at the end of my 8th grade year, the last year of junior high before we went to high school, 8th grade year, there was a girl named Angie who was, we were both teacher's assistant TAs for this one class, and we'd pal around there, and it was kind of cute and flirty or whatever, to the extent that 13-year-olds are cute
sure.
and flirty.
In a sexless sure. kind of, I don't know what this is leading to.
Sure, and way. I was definitely more like the friend than the boyfriend. Like, she would tell me about her problems with her boyfriends or whatever. But I had a crush on her, and we kind of, you know, we're friends, whatever. And then the school year ended. And again, this would have been like 87, 88. And so there was no internet or email or whatever. Like, when the summer came, you just didn't see people anymore.
Right.
People from school just didn't exist.
Right.
Like, your good friends, yeah, but every, like
unless
the
they were within,
people,
like, a couple blocks of your house.
Right.
Yeah.
Or unless you were, like, really friends with them. But she and I, like, we were just sort of friends there in class, whatever. So I just didn't see her for the summer. Ninth grade. At the high school, big old high school, crowded big high school, and I didn't. For all I knew, she had moved away, but I assumed she was still in town. And then I saw her like across the quad, like there she is, there's Angie, she is here, she's still around. And then I couldn't find her, and so for the first several weeks of school, I'm like keeping my eyes out looking for Angie. And this song had, for whatever reason, I had just recently heard, and obviously it stuck in my brain. I know I will find you somewhere. And so the song is playing through my head.
So it was like you were your own montage.
I was exactly that. And I always assumed everyone did this. I used to sort of imagine that I was on a TV show, that
yeah.
I was a TV show. And yes, this was my montage. I was hearing this song as I was looking around for Angie. And then she started dating my cousin.
Oh.
My cousin, the football player. They became boyfriend and girlfriend.
That's how that always happens, actually.
Yeah. But so, yeah, but this song...
That's awesome. That is a legitimately... Sincerely, that is a great story.
Because for whatever reason, I had just happened to have heard this song, like, the day before, and it was perfect. Yeah.
Wow.
I know you're out there somewhere. I will find you somehow, and you'll be dating my football player cousin.
But again, it's about the journey there.
Exactly.
It's about the
exactly.
man, you know, he's a man alone facing the cold world trying
and
to find love.
How romantic and poignant is that? That I literally saw her across the quad,
and
but there's like 200
again.
People between us, and I couldn't find her. And how do you find a girl? And, you know, 2,000 people in this school. Oh.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's a great story. I mean that, really. Here's okay, the next time you're on, here's what you have to do. Here's the next top five you have to do. The next top five you have to do is the top five songs that will play over the opening credits in the movie of your life.
Okay.
All right.
Yes.
We've ratcheted that down from the more... we had a thing that was either more or less high concept, depending on how you look at it, which was that... If the movie of your life were an action film, what would play over the chase sequence? But that became too hard for people.
Sure.
So, top five songs that would play over the opening credits in the movie of your life.
All right. Got it.
Awesome. Fantastic. Well done.
Thank you.
Eric DeSnyder, thank you for joining us and for wasting hours of your life here with me today.
No,
thank you.
I'm thrilled to do it. As you know, I like to work for free. It's my favorite thing.
I hear that everybody does now, so.
It's the in thing.
Eric DeSnyder can be heard tomorrow, that is Friday, from 11 to noon at Cascadia.fm, part of Movie BS with Baron Snyder.
And for that matter, every Friday.
Yeah, every Friday, yes. Every Friday immediately following the Court and Fatboy show and before this program. So that's 11 to noon Fridays, Movie BS with Baron Snyder at Cascadia.fm. Find out more about him at film.com and at EricDSnyder.com. And fear him always. He's Eric D. Snyder. Let's see. Tomorrow, Mr. Big Jim Willig in the studio with us and the return of Don Taylor, etc. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. I feel like I ought to be running across like a mall.
Yeah.
Tracy! And like into traffic and like standing on cars. And like the end of Crocodile Dundee or something.
Mm-hmm.
What was I just saying? Ba-da-da-ba-ba-ba. Well, you know the credits. Do them in your head. We'll be back again tomorrow at noon for Legion of News, followed by this very fine radio program. An encore of both those shows happens now after a brief musical interlude. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all. So thank you for listening, and be sure to spread the word. It is Thursday, April 7th, 2011. That is The Frequency. Kenneth, as always, thank you for listening. Be safe. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.
Say it's dangerous to try. Well, they just don't know that love eternal will not be denied. I know you're out there somewhere. I know you're out there somewhere. You can hear my voice. I know I'll find you somehow. I know I'll find you somehow. And somehow I'll return again. I know it's gonna happen. I can feel you getting near. And see you'll be returning to the fountain of our youth. And if you wake up wondering, wake in the darkness, I'll be there. My arms will close around you and protect you with the truth. Somewhere. I know you're out there somewhere you can hear my voice. I know I'll find you somehow. I know I'll find you somehow, and somehow I'll return again to you.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
What did you think I would do at this moment when you're standing before me with tears in your eyes? Tell me when you found you had another, and you just don't love me no more. What did you think I would say at this moment, when I'm faced with the knowledge that you just don't love me? Did you think I would curse you, say things to hurt you, but you just don't love me no more? Did you think I could hate you, raise my now? Come on, you know me too well. How could I hurt you? And darling, I love you. And you know I'd never hurt you. Whoa. Do you think I would give this moment, if you'd stay, I'd subtract 20 years from my life. you are home. If I could just hold you again. If I could just hold you, if I could just hold you. Just hold.